information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care. It shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember the time you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Don't worry, Portland is not under attack, or at least that's what they tell us, and we're going to find out on episode 89 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 29th, 2008. My name is James Evan Pilato, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, your home, your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Black helicopters over Portland, Obama and the DNC charade parade, Biden and the New World Order, terror drills and curfews, Russia, China, London in 2012, the latest on 9/11, the anthrax attacks, eugenics, Lockerbie, KBR, JFK, GPS, Black H2O, OTB, and the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It's all here on episode 89, August 29th, 2008. It's MediaMonarchy.com.
Hey, yo, life, camera, tragedy, comedy, romance. You better dance when you're fighting stance, so you never have a fighting chance in a rat race where the referee's son started way in advance. But still, you live in the American dream. Silk PJ sheets and down pillows. Who the fuck would wanna wake up? You got it good like hot sex after the breakup. Your four-car garage is just more space to take up. Even bought your mom a new whip, scrapped the jalopy. $1,000 habit, $1 million hobby. You a success story, everybody want a copy. But few work for it, most get jerked for it. If you think that you can ignore it, you're ignorant. A fat wallet still never made a man free. They say to eat good, yo, you gotta swallow your pride. But dead dad game plan, I'm not satisfied.
The poor get work, the rich get richer. The world gets worse, do you get the picture? The poor gets dead, the rich get depressed. The ugly get mad, the pretty get stressed. The ugly get violent, the pretty get gone. The old get stiff, the young get stepped on. Whoever told you that it was all good lies. So throw your fists up, you're not satisfied.
And anthrax got my old earth wearing a mask and gloves to get a mail. I know an older guy that lost 12 close peeps on 911. Why you kicking up punchlines and puns, man? Fuck that shit. This is serious biz. By time Bush is done, you won't know what time it is. If it's wartime or jail time, time for promises and time to figure out where the enemy is. The same devils that you used to love to hate, they got you so gassed and shook now. You scared to debate. The same ones that traded books for guns, smuggled drugs for funds, and had fun letting off 41. But now it's all about NYPD caps and Pentagon bumper stickers. But yo, you're still a nigga. It ain't right them cops and them firemen die. That shit is real tragic, but it damn sure ain't magic. It won't make the brutality disappear. It won't pull equality from behind your ear. It won't make a difference in a two-party country if the president cheats to win another 4 years. Now don't get me wrong, there's no place I'd rather be. The grass ain't greener on the other genocide. But tell Huey Freeman, don't forget to cut the lawn and uproot the weeds, cause I'm not satisfied.
The poor get worse, the rich get richer. The world gets worse, do you get the picture? The poor gets dead, the rich get depressed. The ugly gets mad, the pretty gets stressed. The ugly get violent, the pretty gets born. The old gets stiff, the young get stepped on. Whoever told you that it was all good lies, so throw your fists up, you're not satisfied.
Yo,
cousin pushes making paper off of pipe dreams. They turn hip hop to a get rich quick scheme. The rich minorities control the government, but they will have you believe we on the same team. So where you stand, huh? What do you stand for? Sit your ass down if you don't know the answer. Serious as cancer, this jam demands your undivided attention, even on the dance floor. Grab the bull by the horns, the bucks by the antlers. Get yours, what are you sweating the next man for? Get down, feel good to this, let it ride. But until we all free, I'll never be satisfied.
The poor get worse, the rich get richer. The world gets worse, you get the richer. The poor gets dead, the rich get depressed. The ugly get mad, the pretty get stressed. The ugly get wild, the pretty gets poor. The old get stiff, the young get stepped on. Whoever told you that it was all good lie. So throw your fists up, you're not satisfied. The poor get worse, the rich get richer. The world gets worse, you get the richer. The poor gets dead, the rich get depressed. The ugly get mad, the pretty get stressed. The ugly get wild, the pretty gets poor. The old get stiff, the young get stepped on. Whoever told you that it was all good lie. So throw your fists up, you're not satisfied.
Throw your fists up if you're not satisfied, which I know you're not, or else you probably wouldn't be listening to Media Monarchy, episode 89, August 29th, 2008. Like I said, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern time on RevereRadioNetwork.com. Also, thanks to 95.3 KBFR in Boulder and 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta for replaying the show. I deeply, deeply appreciate it. It means a lot. You can hit me up, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, Skype, and IM with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And, of course, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org is where you can get the podcast each and every week. So, don't worry. Portland is not under attack, or so says the mainstream media reports coming out of black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills. Now, one thing I'll mention is throwing out some appreciation and some thanks. My post got picked up by a lot of other places, like whatreallyhappened.com, prisonplanet.com, Information Liberation, the Ron Paul War Room, and several others I can't even keep track. So thank you for helping get this story out. And while, of course, we will go into the DNC and all of that, I think this is a little more important to me. This is a little more close to home. There are black helicopters cruising around our city. So this all broke Monday night, August 25th. So that's how we're going to start. And the first report that we got comes from local KGW. And that's where we get the line. Don't worry, Portland is not under attack. And now, you know, I've pointed this out when we go over these drills. The articles always start out with, oh, ha, ha, it may have looked like Armageddon, but oh, it's just a drill. Don't worry. Don't worry. Portland is not under attack. Low-flying military helicopters buzzing downtown Portland look like a scene out of a movie. Monday night's drama was all a part of a military exercise. News Channel 8, that's KGW, has learned the Army and Navy are conducting urban military training in Portland and Salem from August 17th to the 30th. So they're not done yet. The training will include, quote, low visibility movement, military operations in urban terrain, manual and low weight explosive breaching, fast rope insertion, live fire, end quote, and other exercises, according to a memo from Portland Mayor Tom Potter to the Navy's Special Warfare Development Group. So now you caught that part where I said live fire. A spokesman in Mayor Potter's office says the military asked permission to conduct the training last November. The Portland Police Bureau's specially trained CERT unit is involved in the training. S-E-R-T, that's basically SWAT. Monday's exercise involved helicopters hopping from one downtown skyscraper to another. Many residents and downtown workers were concerned by the low-flying helicopters. The Department of Defense provided no advance warning of the exercise. Drills involving helicopters are expected to resume on Wednesday evening in Portland. The urban military training is expected to take place in Salem on Tuesday and Thursday. It's not clear what type of training will take place in Salem. Now, the way they played this out is after the public outcry, they were able to sort of backpedal and play it like, oh, well, okay, because of all the outcry, we'll move Wednesday night's operations to Jansen Beach, an area far outside of Portland City proper. My suspicion is that that was always part of the plan and that they knew that after some outcry from having black helicopters land on buildings in downtown without telling anybody about it, then, you know, people would be a little concerned. So then they can go, oh, well, since you're concerned, we'll move it to Jansen Beach. So this post I've kept updated. And again, it's on MediaMonarchy.com. It's called Black Helicopters Over Portland for DOD Terror Drills. So I've kept this particular post updated, so it's all in one spot on the page. So then we can hit up the Oregonian, and they have a little podcast, so we're going to hear a little bit of the military from the horse's mouth. So military choppers to train again on Wednesday. Spokesman for the DOD says the black military helicopters will train again in Portland on Wednesday evening, but he says they're not armed. And then we can jump to the Willamette Week, which is one of our free weeklies here in the city. Surprise Navy training may have included live fire and training ammo. And fortunately, they include over on WWeek.com, and you can hit the link. They have the full letter from Tom Potter writing to the military, basically saying, yes, we would love to have black helicopters in the military training with our police. So you can hit up the whole text of that letter. Then we got another update from KGW. Military chopper buzz muted over Portland skies. Military helicopter training that shocked and awed Portlanders Monday night were pulled back Wednesday over downtown skies. Monday night's drama was all a part of a military exercise. There's links in there. Fortunately, folks up on portland.indymedia.org have been following the story as well. Now, if we jump to Clyde Lewis, who I was not familiar with, my man Alex Ansari from Outside the Box, who we'll hear from later in the show. He's mentioned Clyde Lewis before, but apparently he hosts a little show Monday nights in downtown Portland at Dante's called Ground Zero Lounge. So he has his take on it. Police state of mind, black helicopters over Portland. We're going to hear a little clip from that Monday, August 25th's Ground Zero Lounge show. So dig this. He was there to basically give a presentation about the terror drills and black helicopters in Denver and how that ties in not only with the DNC, but also with the New World Airport, or as you may know it, as the Denver International Airport, and all the strange goings on there, which we've covered in part in past episodes. So we do also have some videos from KPTV and also KATU and more from the Oregonian. Portland to black helicopters, stick to Jansen Beach. So again, reinforcing the idea that they actually changed their plans because of the public outcry. So the big contradiction in all of this is when the initial reports all came out, it was live fire training. And again, once the outcry happened, they say, oh, no, 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 no one's armed. So I have a lot of clips, and we're going to listen to those in just a second. But there's also an article up from Alex Ansari on his page, alexansari.com, alexansary.com, black helicopter swarm downtown Portland. The notorious black helicopters have been making more regular appearances in major American cities, including Portland. Only this time we're hearing more about the possibility of live fire being used as military personnel practice jumping from the helicopters onto rooftops in downtown. So again, the big question is, what are they training for? So they can say that this is for, you know, in case of some sort of national emergency or disaster or... But do you think they're training to pick up the common folk like you and I from our rooftops? I don't think so. They're training to pick people up from the handful of tall skyscrapers in Portland. So yeah, all these training, and again, we'll mention the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It's not for us. They're not coming to help us. Fortunately, yesterday, this is the last thing I'll say before I'll play the big rack of clips that I've got related to black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills. I was able to get on the Alex Jones Show. Now, Alex, of course, has been in Denver for the DNC this last week, but I got on and was able to talk to my man Jason Burmis, one of the men behind Loose Change, and also his own new movie coming out next week called Fabled Enemies. So I got to talk to Jason Burmis on the Alex Jones Show for a few minutes, and then we're going to hear stuff from KGW, KATU, and also from Clyde Lewis. So here we go. It's Black Helicopters over Portland.
Let's jump to James in Oregon. James, what's on your mind?
Yo, calling from the home of the latest DOD PSYOP terror drills in Portland, Oregon.
My boy actually called me the other night and told me all about them, but why don't you go over for it?
So did you not cover these?
No, I didn't cover them on the show. I actually, late night phone call with my friend who lives out in Portland, Oregon, and he was telling me how there was just crazy amount of military drills going on. He was asking me if I knew about them, and I was like, no, what can you tell me about them? He was like, well, they look like domestic takeovers. Drills, but fill me in, man.
That's, I think, pretty much what they are. So, fortunately, I've been posting everything I can find on my site, MediaMonarchy.com, and fortunately, Mike Rivero, and also Prison Planet, and Ron Paul War Room, and Portland Indie Media, and even, unfortunately, sites like Stormfront have picked up my story, so it's helping to go viral. But It's basically black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills. It's always, you know, given to you in the way of, oh, don't worry.
And I heard the black
attack.
I heard the black helicopters were everywhere, man. I heard it was just, like, ridiculous. And my friend was just like, I couldn't even believe it. And he's like, you've been showing me this stuff for so long, I just wasn't even prepared to see it up close, but he did. Continue.
And that, I was kind of in the same spot. I worked the night shift, so I slept through it. Mm-hmm. But later that evening, I had people coming up to me saying, so tell me about the drills. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. But of course, I talked to people about it enough to where they've now been keyed in on it. Portland is also the home of an unfortunate amount of terror drills, from the top-off drills to Vigilant Shield last year. Mm-hmm. I think it puts a lot of us kind of on edge, because exactly what are you training for?
And it's a beautiful area to live in, by the way. I visited there a couple summers ago, hung out with my cousin and my friend I'm talking about now, and you know, I walked through downtown Portland. It's a gorgeous area. It's a really nice place. People seem pretty open-minded. We sold out our theater showing of about 500 people. I mean, there seem to be a lot of well-meaning, intelligent people there. So it really is no wonder for me that they would drill up there, number one, because they might have some resistance, and number two, because it's a little more low-key than, say, a New York or California drill.
Exactly. And it is referred to by Poppy Bush as Little Beirut, from the greetings that the Bush crime family got here many, many years ago. But basically, there are, you know, cats out here like me and like Alex Ansary, who actually has an article up on this as
and
well.
I love his radio show, by the way. I've been on it a couple times. He's a really good guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, his television show is on tonight, so he'll probably be going over these. So we saw it in Denver a few weeks ago, and now we see it in Portland here, so...
And we're going
to
continue to
take over our cities.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks,
yeah,
bro.
You got it, man. Yeah, man, they are. It's real.
Last night, Portland was abuzz with four black military helicopters that swooped low over downtown, prompting dozens of concerned calls to emergency dispatchers. The racket was part of a joint military exercise by the Army and Navy. They're training in Portland this week. Nathan Potter is a spokesman for the Department of Defense. He says the purpose of the exercise, which involves 180 people, is to put troops in an unfamiliar urban setting.
First time our guys are exposed to unfamiliar high-rises and traffic patterns and people and all different life and the confusion of being in a large city, the first time they're exposed to that should not be when they're in combat. So we routinely train in other large urban environments in the United States so they can learn to become prepared to handle that confusion when they go overseas.
When they go overseas, they're armed, but the troops training last night were not, he says.
The helicopters have no ordnance, no missiles, no bombs, nothing like that. And the personnel on board, they have their weapons, but they are not armed. There's no ammunition on them at all.
The helicopter training will resume again Wednesday evening, so be prepared for that. The troops will be gone by the end of the week.
Well, did you see them up there? Police are getting a whole lot of calls about those black military helicopters flying over Portland this week. You might have seen them flying over your home. This is video of one spotted over the area on Monday night. The police bureau is assisting the Department of Defense with some training exercises. However, because flights are causing so much concern, they'll now be restricted to the Jansen Beach area.
Tonight is a very strange night, and I'll tell you why. When I was preparing the show tonight, when I was getting ready to come out to the Ground Zero Lounge here at Dante's in Portland, Oregon, the show tonight is really going to be appropriate because for some strange reason here in Portland, we have been buzzed. The city of Portland right now is being buzzed by black helicopters. I got called out just a second ago, and as I was preparing my show, I swear I heard helicopters buzzing over my house. I thought I was freaking out. I said, is anybody, I told Sarah, she was giving me a ride. I said, tell me something. Are there helicopters buzzing? Is there like a helicopter race going on? She said, I didn't see anything. But as I was sitting here preparing the show here at the Ground Zero Lounge, some people came up and they said, Clyde, you got to come outside. I came outside and there over the city are black helicopters right now dropping men off onto the roofs of some of the buildings here in Portland, Oregon. Now, how many people saw the black helicopters coming in by applause? Anybody? Few of you? Go ahead. You want to say something about that? Go ahead.
As I was driving in just off I-5 right by the Ross Island Bridge, I saw one and it was circling and it was real low. It was almost as if it was just almost right at the rooftop. Going at a high rate of speed, no lights, black helicopter.
I know. It's amazing that this is going on and, you know, I don't know why they'd be doing a test because usually I'm made aware of these tests. I usually have got my ear to ground. I got my nose to the grindstone. I'm trying to figure out just what is going on out there. And what I see now has got me a little bit worried because of what's going on in Denver right now. I just got word that there were 4 arrests that were made about an hour and a half ago. A group of men with scoped guns and methamphetamines with scopes are able to shoot a target 750 yards were just arrested. They wanted to kill Barack Obama. They were going to assassinate him. I haven't got much of the details of the story about the assassination attempt on Obama, but they have just been arrested and they were plotting to kill him on Thursday when he was going to make his acceptance speech. So I just want to let you know that, you know, what we talked about weeks ago here at the Ground Zero Lounge about the Denver convention being a place where a lot of strange stuff is going to go down is happening now. I mean, there are a lot of people that are angry about what's going on. And I knew that I didn't know how appropriate the show was going to be tonight. As you can see, tonight's show is called Another Trick in the Wall, the Denver Airport Conspiracy. But it's more than just the Denver Airport. It's about Denver itself, and it's about the area, and it's about what's going on with the convention tonight and what may happen and why on earth we have black helicopters buzzing Portland, Oregon right now.
This guy's about Jansen Beach may serve as a reminder tonight that we are still fighting the war on terror. The Department of Defense is doing some training missions in Oregon this week. And if you don't know what to expect, it could look pretty frightening. KPTV 7 Quarry is live at Jansen Beach tonight with a closer look at the mission. Kevin?
Yeah, and Shawna, you know, just talked with the lieutenant from the Department of Defense, and we are getting some more answers about this training. I want to let you know that we are right next to the Interstate Bridge, and right here behind me is kind of staging area. You can see dozens of vehicles parked here, many of them federal government employees. Portland police also assisting in this. We also might see some Portland firefighters as well. Here, basically, what's going on, this is Department of Defense training, and they have been in Portland all week long. A helicopter actually just touched down in the parking lot just a moment ago, so people who live out here in the Jansen Beach area may be hearing helicopters here in the next few minutes. But let me let you know that this all kind of came to a head on Monday, and we'll show you some pictures here from that exercise on Monday. People did spot some military-type helicopters over downtown Portland, and we had some pictures of that exercise. Also, when that happened, dozens of people called police because they didn't know what was happening. Now, we can tell you now, of course, that this is a Department of Defense training, and it's called Realistic Urban Training. The lieutenant from the Department of Defense told me that they do this in urban settings because they want to have a realistic setting, and they don't want to do it on military basis because it would become complacent. Now, they tell us that they didn't want to give much notice, mainly because of safety reasons. They didn't want to give a lot of notice and then draw a crowd and create traffic jams and have people come out trying to see this training and therefore possibly create some kind of a safety concern. However, this has caused some controversy, and we talked with one man tonight who says that there should have been more notice.
have a personal friend that, you know, said that he saw the helicopters. You know, most of the reports that I've seen, you know, the people were sort of like, what's going on? They thought, you know, maybe there was some kind of a military operation underway, you know, maybe overseas, you know, like nobody really knew anything. So, you know, that kind of, lack of disclosure, I think, is what concerns me most.
Now, I'm told about 180 Department of Defense employees are involved in this exercise. A helicopter touching down again, once again right here behind us. We'll keep you updated on this tonight. Report live in North Portland, Kevin Kawari, 10 o'clock news.
Black helicopters over Portland, Oregon. The military is working with our local police for urban warfare drills. Now, up on the post, I do have a lot of comments of people saying things like, fuck Tom Potter, get him the hell out of office as fast as possible. He allowed the corrupt Bush regime to use Portland as a New World Order petri dish. Will Sam be an improvement? Referring to Sam Adams, our probable new mayor in the fall. He should be removed from office if he does the shit Potter is doing. And other things saying, like, this is just urban pacification drills. When there are no elections in November, Portland and other free-thinking cities will be targets. People in these places will riot, and they will need to be put down fast. My advice, get out now. And that's all I think I have to say about it, my friends. Maybe just something about those clips. I know it sounds, when I listen back to it, talking to Burmese, I'm kind of tooting my own horn, making it sound like, oh, it's just me and Alex, we're the only ones. But that's not true. There's a lot of us, and I thank them for their help. The young guy you heard from, the DOD spokesman, whose last name, or Nathan Potter, of course, no relation to the mayor, Tom Potter. He sounded like he was about 20 years old. And it's drills, my friends. That's why we watch the drills. Now, I'll just say quickly, before we move on, I was talking to my man Cliff, who precedes me on the air here on Portland Radio Authority, and we were talking about the black helicopters, and I was telling him about the drills on 9/11, which he had never heard about. So there's still a lot of people who haven't heard about the drills that somehow end up mirroring real events, whether it's the 18-plus drills going on 9/11, or the drills on 7/7, or even the War Games Operation Brimstone, which immediately preceded the U.S.-Russia-Georgia proxy war. So it's all there for you. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's dozens of links in there. Like I always say, you only get a taste, a different taste here on the radio version of MediaMonarchy.com, but the site is where you want to go for all your research and all your documentation. But now let's move to the other story that I know you're anxious to hear about. Of course, Selection 08, Obamasiah, and the DNC charade parade. I'm not going to play any clips of any of the speeches, really, from the past week. Actually, we will hear from one. We'll hear a good one. But not the one from last night in the Greek temple that was set up for the coronation of the Obamasiah. So we got a lot of stories, a lot of links for you, but like a lot of times, the best way to do it is to set it straight with a little bit of satire.
Civil rights leaders are hailing criticism that Barack Obama is a patrician snob as a breakthrough for African Americans. In an op-ed in the New York Times, historian Dr. Robert Woodson wrote, 20 years ago, it would have been inconceivable that the news would portray a black man as out of touch with the working class. Dr. King's dream is now a reality. Joining us now is the author of those words, Dr. Robert Woodson. Welcome, sir.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you say the media's depiction of Obama as an elitist represents a watershed moment for America.
Yes. In the past, blacks were seen as ignorant or dangerous.
Right.
That today, a black man is seen as too good for people is a huge step forward.
A huge step indeed. Our polls show more than a third of voters think Obama doesn't understand the struggles of blue-collar workers.
Oh, yes. I never thought I'd see the day when an old white millionaire is viewed as having more in common with working folks than a black man. It's a proud day for America.
It is.
I remember there was a time when a white person would see a black man on the street and cross to the other side suicide for fear he'd get mugged.
Oh, it wasn't that long ago.
Now he crosses out of fear he'll be asked to donate to PBS.
It is incredibly inspiring.
You really have to give credit to the American people for being able to look past Obama's skin color to see the Harvard-educated smartass underneath.
That's right. But the media shares some of the credit,
yes,
wouldn't you say, as
do.
Well? The NAACP today awarded Fox News a Medal of Service for what they called their tireless work on behalf of African Americans.
Yes, Fox News. They truly have worked night and day to present Obama as pampered and overly intellectual.
Oh, they've done so much for the black community. Now, do you think Obama's image will affect future black politicians?
Oh, yes. In the future, we might see black candidates painted as wine snobs, yacht enthusiasts.
Maybe even rednecks.
That would be something.
Wouldn't it? So, clearly, you are voting for Obama.
No, of course not. I've worked my whole life. I have nothing in common with the man.
Dr. Robert Woodson, thanks so much again for joining us.
You're welcome, Andre.
Coming up next, John McCain gave another speech today attempting to distance himself from his policies.
Oh, and speaking of John McCain, my friends, with a glance over to Google News, got breaking news for you. In a surprise move, John McCain has chosen Sarah Palin as his running mate. It's P-A-L-I-N, and I'm not actually sure if it's Palin or Palin. So, New York Times, Dateline Dayton, in a surprise move, Senator John McCain announced here Friday that he had chosen Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska as his running mate, shaking up the political world at a time when his campaign has been trying to attract women, especially disaffected supporters of Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm very happy today to spend my birthday with you and to make a historic announcement in Dayton, said Mr. McCain, who turned 72 today, explaining that he had been looking for the running mate who can, quote, best help me shake up Washington. In choosing Ms. Palin, a 44-year-old conservative and mother of five who has been governor for less than 2 years, the McCain campaign reached far outside the Washington Beltway in an election in which the Democratic presidential nominee, Senator Barack Obama, is running on a platform of change. And he, of course, chose the consummate Washington insider as his VP. So there you go, my friends. Breaking news for you on MediaMonarchy.com. McCain chooses Palin as running mate. And we'll keep an eye peeled on that to see if anything happens during the show. Now, we heard some satire from The Onion. But now, something that isn't satire and coming to us from Daily Pakistan, daily.pk, but brought to me by BlacklistedNews.com. Barack Obama, not a U.S. citizen. On August 21st, attorney Philip J. Berg, who will now be smeared for this move of being connected to those bastardly 9/11 truthers. On August 21st, attorney Philip J. Berg requested an injunction in federal court against the nomination of Barack Obama, citing evidence that candidate Obama is not a U.S. citizen and, quote, the obvious problems that will occur when the Republican Party raises these issues after Obama is nominated. Berg argues that Obama was born in Kenya in 1961 to an American woman, Stanley Ann Dunham, and a Kenyan man, Barack Hussein Obama Sr., as reportedly shown by a birth certificate from Mombasa Maternity Hospital. According to the law at that time, a parent could pass U.S. citizenship onto a child born abroad if the parent was at least 19 years old. Obama's mother was only 18. No hospital birth certificate has been produced to show Obama was born in Hawaii, only a certificate of birth registry after the fact, which forensic experts have denounced as a forgery. Moreover, when Obama was 6 years old, his mother remarried and moved with her husband to his country, Indonesia. Records indicate Obama was naturalized as an Indonesian citizen. Indonesia does not allow dual nationality, so even had he been born in Hawaii, he would have lost his citizenship then. Even if Obama is able to provide a U.S. birth certificate, a dozen more insurmountable scandals face this unelectable candidate, which the Republicans can hardly wait to unleash on him after he is nominated. So that's coming from the Daily Pakistan by way of BlacklistedNews.com. Some of the other things I have posted up, we're going to brush over 84,000-plus packed Invesco Field to hear Obama's speech last night. The Guardian has Obama's speech broken down by the numbers, the number of times he uses specific words. Time magazine has Obama's risky stadium gig. We've got McCain, quote, conservatives attempt to paint Obama as a Marxist bomb thrower from his connections to William Ayers. which, of course, Obama is about as much of a Marxist bomb thrower as McCain is a conservative. Our good friends Kevin Booth at Sacred Cow Productions and his film and ongoing project, it seems now, American Drug War, points out Sleepwalker McCain will lock up pot smokers but regularly uses powerful sleeping pills like Ambien. Washington Post has in Denver, police and protesters prepare for each other. Legal observers document strong police presence at DNC anti-war protest. Denver's ironic treatment of homelessness during the DNC. Homeland Security to use controversial fusion centers during the convention. That's from the AP. Recreate 68 and their provocateur self-defense training at the DNC. That's from Blacklisted News. AP has DNC hall surrounded by steel cage. DNC police bulletin. People with city maps could be planning violence. No more razor wire at Denver convention holding cells. Of course, after the public found out about it, which we covered last week. That once there was an outcry, they go, oh, okay, well, we'll take down the razor wire and the sign that says, we're going to tase you. Freedom cages coming to Denver. Secret Service, CIA, and military plans to suppress protest at the DNC. That's from Alex Constantine. Michelle Malkin says DNC protesters want brush with torture. That's from Raw Story. And that was before this bizarre, seemingly provocateur confrontation between Michelle Malkin and Alex Jones. I'm not going to dive into all that, but there are the links you can hit up. We've also got security turns U.S. conventions into $100 million fortresses. That's from the AP. Some of the video coming out of the DNC, police informer exposed. We also, of course, have videos of Denver police brutality. And we're going to hear some of the early audio from protests in just a little bit. Claim that protesters carried rocks is disputed. That's from Colorado Indie Media. Denver police hit protesters with pepper spray from cannons and arrest 100 people. Anti-abortion protesters arrested in Denver. That's from the DPA. An ABC reporter was arrested in Denver for taking pictures of senators and their big money donors. McClatchy is also carrying the story. Pelosi is heckled everywhere she goes. Cindy Sheehan happened to catch a phone bugger in the act at her hotel at the DNC. Raw Story, fortunately, covered the 9/11 Truth activist march through Denver. Protesters denied access to attorneys, forced to march in leg shackles, the ACLU charges. The city defends their secret jails that they built for the DNC. A little side note here, of course. Company acknowledges voting machine error. That's the thing, you know, the elephant in the room that we always forget about. Oh, that's right. Our elections are staged. It doesn't matter which side you put up, whether it's Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair or whatever WWF tag team bullshit they're giving us. CBS News is covering Giuliani's visit to a terrorism exhibit near the DNC, where he, of course, said, this is a reminder, this thing is still going on. And it, of course, brings to mind all the creepy times that Giuliani seems to pop up whenever there's terror in the world. Of course, whether it's 9/11 or whether he was in London during the 7/7 bombings. But now, the one speech I will play a clip from. He was on, actually, probably just 20 minutes before I watched Governor Joe Manchin of West Virginia speak. But let's listen to a couple moments from the man that the Dems should have nominated.
Wake up, America! The insurance companies took over healthcare. Wake up, America! The pharmaceutical companies took over drug pricing. Wake up, America! The speculators took over Wall Street. Wake up, America! They want your Social Security. Wake up, America! Multinational corporations took over our trade policies. Factories are closing. Good-paying jobs are being lost. Wake up, America! We went into Iraq for oil. The oil companies want more. War against Iran will mean $10 a gallon gasoline. The oil administration, they want to drill more into your wallet. Wake up, America! Contractors want more. Those war contractors want more. An Iran war will cost $5 to $10 trillion.
Wake up, America, indeed. That was the man, Dennis Kucinich, who kind of looked like he was all bumped up on some yay at the DNC. But he gave it his all. He unfortunately ends it by saying, up with the Democratic Party, up with Obama, Biden, of course, making no mention of impeachment. But that's who the Dems should have given the nomination to. If we return now to the posting, the other, only other, actually, that's not true. There is Cynthia McKinney, there's Ralph Nader, there's any number of people that are worthy alternatives to McCain-Obama. However, on CNN, just the other day, Ron Paul, CampaignForLiberty.com, he, of course, is hosting his big counter event to the RNC next week. That's going to have tons of music, tons of people, Jesse Ventura, Amy Allen, all kinds. Tucker Carlson, I think, is going to be there. But just in this three and a half minute clip from Ron Paul on CNN, this lays out everything. And this is everything that you would have liked for your supposed change candidate to say. Here's Ron Paul.
Welcome back to American Morning. With all the talk of tension between the Obama and Clinton camps earlier this week, what's creating the greatest divide in the GOP? Well, former Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul is at odds with many of the more mainstream Republicans, and he joins us now with his take on how things have been going. Ron Paul, great to see you as always, Congressman.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
You saw the speeches last night. Bill Clinton oversaw a strong economy during his presidency. This is what he argued last night in his speech, and he made the case that the GOP in the past 8 years has really run the economy into the ground, and that is why they don't deserve four more years. What did you think of his speech, specifically what he was saying about the economy?
Well, I think there's some truth to that, but I don't think he can claim all the credit for it. The Federal Reserve is really responsible for the booms and the busts. So the Federal Reserve pumped up the credit during his period in the 1990s, and there was a lot of capital gains taxes came in and helped the budget. But the situation is exactly the same, whether it's the 90s or now. It's just that we go through these cycles, but the Federal Reserve causes these problems, and for him to claim great credit. But the Republicans come up short. They talk about balanced budgets and smaller government, and then we put him in power, and look at what happens. The deficits explode, and now they're on the short end. The economy turned down, but it wasn't the fact that just George Bush was in office. It was due to turn down, because that's the consequence of what happens when you create an artificial bubble.
Do you think it's a valid argument, though, that a John McCain administration would be a four-year extension of the Bush administration?
Sure, but I think that's what's going to be happening with Obama, too. There's no difference. Their foreign policies are identical. They want more troops in Afghanistan. They want to send more support to Georgia to protect the oil line there. Neither one says bring home the troops from Iraq from the bases. You know, the bases are going to stay there. The embassy as big as the Vatican, that's going to remain. So their foreign policies are exactly the same. They're both very, very aggressive with Iran. I would say there's no difference.
And you were the one, of course, in the primaries and at the debates that the only Republican really opposed to Iraq, calling for a pullout, the Iraq war, calling for a pullout of troops. How would you handle these global threats then if it's not to send our troops there and make sure that we're protected?
Well, we create the threats. Why are we on the borders of Russia provoking the Russians? I mean, the Georgians initiated the military attack against these enclaves where they were mostly Russian. So it's sort of like the Russians being on the border of Mexico and then us, blaming ourselves. No, it's the fact that we're over there that we create these crises.
Isn't it part of our duty, though, to support these fledgling democracies that ask for our help, which is what Georgia did?
No, it's not our responsibility to do that. It's their responsibility. But we should endorse the principle, but not send troops and money. The principle of self-determination is a very good one. But once we get over there, we just aggravate the situation. What did we do? We did exactly the opposite in Yugoslavia. We bombed Serbia in order for Kosovo to become independent. Now the Russians are doing the same thing, and then we're on the opposite side. It's this total inconsistency. Absolute interference when we should not be there, and we don't have any money to do this, and we don't even have any troops. If we really needed our troops to go into Georgia, we didn't even have them available, which proves my point that we are undermining our national defense with the foreign policy that we have.
We're out of time. I have to let you go, but I just want to ask you one quick thing. Are you going to be telling your supporters, and you had many, many of them, to back either one of these candidates?
Oh, well, I've endorsed neither one and will not endorse either of the two top candidates.
All right. Congressman Ron Paul, always great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Laying it out straight like he always has. Ron Paul, there's no difference between McCain and Obama. Calling out the Federal Reserve, calling out the false left-right paradigm, calling out the foreign policy debacles that we create, whether it's Iraq or Iran or Russia or Georgia. That's it. There it is. And that's why he will get my vote on November 4th. Let's have a little preview of what we'll no doubtedly be covering next week. And that's going to be the RNC.
Protesters say, if you think demonstrations against Democrats in Denver were big, wait until you see what happens in Minnesota with the Republicans.
We have word that people are coming on buses and carpools. People are flying in from all over the country.
Activists are busy painting banners and making huge puppets for the biggest planned protest, a massive anti-war march through the streets of St. Paul on Monday.
We are expecting the police to uphold our right to demonstrate, to speak out against the war.
Organizers say they expect about 50,000 demonstrators from all over the country to show up for Monday's march.
That's quite impressive. That says that the country wants to see change. The country wants to see an end to the war in Iraq.
Keeping all those protesters peaceful will be a challenge, as some anarchist groups have vowed to crash the convention.
In terms of what others are doing, I think that we're aware of you know, the other tactics that other groups are doing, and so we're trying to schedule around, you know, that those different activities.
Local law enforcement will be out in full force, and just in case things do get out of hand, the Sheriff's Department has built a temporary outdoor holding area capable of detaining hundreds of arrested protesters. Haven Daily, The Associated Press.
What I had posted up the first day of the DNC on Monday, the 25th, the phony left-right paradigm parade begins. Get ready for provocateur violence, grandstanding, and all the bread and circus bullshit you can handle. First article from Paul Joseph Watson, will authorities stage riots in Denver? Now, of course, the clip just mentioned those anarchists, and of course, we've exposed that a lot of times they're paid agents provocateurs, or useful idiots or dupes, or some mix of all those things. The major question hanging over the DNC is whether or not authorities will follow the lead of previous mass protest events and actively stage violence to justify a brutal crackdown on legitimate demonstrators. Of course, last year, after an incident during the SPP summit in Montebello, Canada, Quebec provincial authorities were forced to admit that three rock-wielding, mask-wearing anarchists, quote-unquote, were in fact police infiltrators used to gather information on protesters. We've also got a clip of Fox News. It's interesting on a few different levels. They wade into the crowd on the first day. But we also have stuff from Raw Story and the Deutsche Press Agency. McCain and Obama tied in the polls as Dems opened their convention. The Gallup poll showed each candidate with 45%. And Raw Story, more from the ACLU, Denver cops amped up by anti-protester memo. CNN's Joe Johns reported on security at the DNC, reported that the ACLU was irate at a memo that they say is causing police to get, quote, amped up to deal with protesters. And we started it off late Sunday night, and anti-war protesters had already hit the streets in Denver. So we're going to hear a few different clips in this, and afterwards we'll break down the Fox News clip.
Laws that permit Samuel Ariane and many more like him to be hounded by the government with no end for Israel's, quote, right, unquote, to Jerusalem. An affirmation that nations...
I'm here to try to stop the war machine. Oppose the war machine and oppose the war, and don't speak out of both sides of your mouth.
These are some of the grounds on which war is waged. It is a stated inclination of presidential candidates to to wage war against third world people around the world who have never attacked us. All candidates have made about Iran and comments about Senator Obama that Senator Obama made about Pakistan. We want access to on our terms, and because Israel and its supporters in government and in the media built the case for war because they thought that we are supposed to talk about, but which we must, the extent to which Israel's diehard supporters built the case for the U.S. illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq.
As you can imagine, security is ramped up here in Denver. Tens of thousands of people descending on the city. Police keep an eye on things, using everything from new technology to new ways of corralling protesters. CNN's Joe Johns is on the security beat. He's here now with a look. Good morning to you, Joe.
Good morning. A couple of uneventful dry runs this weekend, real time, giving the police an opportunity to sort of fine-tune their plans. The only issues that really arose were crowd control. And now, of course, it's time for the main event.
Denver Airport, just in time for the convention. Today, TSA is rolling out new technology to help keep people safe without being invasive. This is a passive screening gizmo that looks for explosives with no x-rays, no prying, no peeking under people's clothes, no lines.
So it's like not cooking me, right?
Correct.
It's not putting out something that's going through my body.
No opportunity to microwave your coffee or any other type of food product.
Can it, you know, so if I have something in my pocket, you know, can it see it?
No, actually, it's not looking through your clothes. It's just registering energy that's being emitted from you.
But don't think for a minute that this convention coming off without the sort of in-your-face security measures that get civil liberties advocates upset.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer.
Like this warehouse divided into pens made of chain-link fencing to hold people who get locked up during the convention. Critics are comparing it to the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, though it's only supposed to be a processing center, not a jailhouse.
What's wrong with them doing that is that this is America, and we have established a system of in which we deal with people who violate our codes and our laws, and that is the jailing and prison system.
Then there's the parking lot around the corner from the convention hall, fenced in by the city for demonstrations. Protesters are angry because they say it's so far from the action. The Secret Service says their grievances will still be heard by the delegates as they walk into the arena.
For all intents and purposes, this will be the greeting party, for lack of a better way to put it, because it'll be the first exposure as the delegates come through the screening process.
Add to that the recent police warnings for officers to be on the lookout for stockpiles of supplies. Anything from nails to cause flat tires, to pipes, chemicals, helmets, and shields that could be used by violent demonstrators. The ACLU is irate.
This poses a tremendous risk of getting officers all amped up for a confrontation.
Okay, so are the law enforcement guys going overboard?
I don't think we will. I think that we're set to take action when it needs to be taken, and I'm hoping we don't have to take any.
Activist groups we talk to say everything they are planning is peaceful. The authorities say they've got a plan for the worst.
Yesterday, there was a pretty fair-sized protest outside. The only problem there, of course, they had to briefly close down one of the entrances to the convention complex, John.
Quite a large frozen zone around the complex, too. We had to walk quite a distance this morning to get
here. That's right. There will be more entrances today, so it'll be a little easier, they say.
All right. Joe, thanks so much for that.
And Eric, before the Democratic National Convention even kicks off, far-left political groups are rallying in Denver, as we've heard, and they've just begun their march on the convention center. And who is in the midst of them all? Griff Jenkins. He's live in Denver outside the convention center. Griff, it got a little heated there when you were in that crowd. What's happening now?
Jamie, I'll tell you, this is the Recreate 68 crowd, as Alicia was talking about. You can see them just behind me. We got ahead of this marching thing, and I got to tell you, there's a lot of different groups represented, Jamie. It's an alliance of a lot of folks, but one of the things we're beginning to see is the mask coming out, the black mask, red mask, and I don't know how rowdy this is going to be. You can see them coming out behind me. There's about 1,000 or so folks, all sorts of different groups represented. We had Cynthia McKinney in it. She's running for the president on the group. Green Party. I had Cindy Sheehan. And then I had the disgraced Colorado professor Ward Churchill, Jamie, who refused to speak to me. These people say they believe in freedom of speech, but I got roughed up a little bit trying to get some questions in there. And it looks like they're trying to take their message to this convention, and not all of them are Obama fans. That's perhaps the biggest surprise of all, that Obama is getting not as much love as even Bush. They're done with Bush. Now they're trying to make the Democrats realize they want out of Iraq, they want no war in Iran. That's the message.
But Griff, Puerto Rico and Hawaii as well, what is their concern there?
Well, let me ask you, what's your message? What are you upset about?
Upset about everything.
What's that? Well, I guess they don't believe in freedom of speech. Let's just work this crowd and see who else we can talk to. Defend Denver. Explain that to me. What does that mean?
I'm not going to talk to you.
What's that?
I'm not going to talk to you.
Do you believe in freedom of speech? What's your name? Come here. What's your name? What's your name?
My name is Junior Melendez.
Oh, come on. That's not necessary. Do you have a message? Do you have an actual message with that? Do you have an actual message without cursing? What's your message?
Stop the torture. Stop the war.
Stop the torture. Stop the war. Do you not believe in? Do you not believe in freedom? Do you not believe? All right. Well, I gotta let it go with that, Jamie. It's a little bit out of control here. That's just not necessary.
All right, well, we're going to go then because it is out of control. I just want to remind our viewers, if you're just tuning in, outside the Democratic Convention, not that far away, is this march going on. This group saying they want to recreate 68, which is a reference to the 1968 riots that took place. There you can see Griff Jenkins, our own Griff Jenkins, in the midst of the crowd, giving them a chance to speak out, to tell what their message is, and they're not even talking. All they're doing is screaming and yelling at him. We'll make sure he's okay. We'll check back with him when he can get himself sort of away from that really raucous crowd.
That they made the decision to go wade into. Rather than going to talk to, you know, grandmas with the baby strollers or war vets, they go and talk to, or try and talk to, you know, 18-year-old recreate 68 wannabe anarchists. Now, of course, it is fun to hear them say fuck Fox News live on Fox News. But, again, the way they paint it. More DNC news. What broke after last week's episode, I was keeping an eye out. Like today, I did see that McCain chose Governor Palin as his VP. But last week, we found out it's Obama-Biden 08, and the crowd goes, meh. First from Think Progress, Obama selects Joseph Biden as his running mate. They officially revealed the selection in a text message to over 3 million people, which, of course, we'll get to in just a moment. They botched that. But Biden, as, of course, we mentioned, is the consummate Washington insider. We're going to get to some of those important questions in just a minute. He's, of course, been the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and he's done a great job. Our foreign relations are fantastic. So if we jump to Wiki News, Obama announces Biden as running mate via text message. Now, I'm pretty sure that if you were watching TV, you found out sooner. So from threat level, Obama leaves texters at the altar and runs off with a dinosaur press. The best line in the coverage of Barack Obama's choice of Senator Joe Biden as running mate is this nugget from the AP story. Quote, the official who spoke did so on condition of anonymity, preferring not to preempt a text message announcement the Obama campaign promised for Saturday morning. If the official didn't want to preempt the much-anticipated text message announcement, shouldn't it have been Biden's name that was kept secret? And, of course, Daily Costs, CIA front Marcus Molitzis was gloating Friday night, blah, blah, blah. But, again, in the end, the Obama campaign, with all their talk of blazing bold new trails and blah, 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 behaved just like any other political campaign and went to CNN, AP, Fox News, ABC, NBC, and CBS with its news. It turns out the revolution will be televised. It just won't be a revolution. Well written from threat level. ABC News, of course, noted that the Secret Service sped their way over to Joe Biden's house. Another tip-off that that Biden was Obama's VP pick because they watched the Secret Service go to his house. U.S. News and World Report, Obama's and McCain's VP picks won't matter in November. While vice presidential mania hits its peak, can we take a deep breath and remember something? In November, it won't matter whom Obama and McCain select. Remember two names. Lyndon Baines Johnson, and J. Danforth Quayle. But if we jump to global research, now we're getting into the dirt. Obama selects Biden to reassure the U.S. ruling elite. The selection of Senator Joseph Biden as the vice presidential candidate of the Democratic Party underscores the fraudulent character of the Democratic primary campaign and the undemocratic character of the entire two-party electoral system. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama, the supposed protagonist of change, has picked as his running mate a fixture of the Washington establishment, a six-term U.S. senator who is a proven defender of American imperialism in the interests of big business. The rollout of the Biden selection over the days of escalating media attention culminated in the text message announcement early Saturday in a kickoff rally in Springfield, Illinois, and it's a metaphor for the entire Obama campaign. His presidential candidacy represents not an insurgency from below, but an effort to manipulate mass sentiments using internet technology and slick marketing techniques aided by compliant media to produce a political result that is utterly conventional and in keeping with the requirements of the U.S. ruling elite. Further down the rabbit hole, this from Cryptagon by way of the University of Delaware. They've got the speech all archived up. 1992 speech from Joseph Biden, quote, on the threshold of a new world order. In his speech in Clayton Hall, on the threshold of the New World Order, a rebirth for the United Nations, Biden says the world's leaders must adopt a new understanding of security. Quote, collective security today must encompass not only the security of nations, but also mankind's security in a global environment that has proven vulnerable to debilitating changes wrought by man's own endeavors. Thus, in setting an American agenda for a new world order, we must begin with a profound alteration in traditional thought. That's Joe Biden championing the New World Order way back in 92. Now, if we jump to 9/11 blogger, more pertinent questions and insights. Digging, lifting up rocks. A few questions for Biden that should be answered, preferably under oath. The following question was submitted to the 9/11 Commission by the 9/11 Family Steering Committee. Why did Mahmoud Ahmed, director of Pakistan's Secret Service, the ISI, order Saeed Sheikh to wire $100,000 to hijacker Mohammed Atta? What was Mahmoud Ahmed's relationship with Al-Qaeda? Where did that money come from? Did officials in Pakistan know in advance about the terrorist attack? And on 9/11, Mahmoud Ahmed had a breakfast meeting in D.C. with House and Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Porter Goss and Senator Bob Graham. What were they discussing? The 9/11 Commission also presumably heard about Lieutenant General Ahmed from FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds during her 3.5 hours of testimony. At the insistence of the families, they may have also heard of Lieutenant General Ahmed during a meeting with the Pakistani ISI, Inter-Services Intelligence. The 9/11 Commission did not answer the families' questions and did not mention Lieutenant General Mahmoud Ahmed in their report, even though they were mandated to give a, quote, full and complete accounting, end quote, of the 9/11 attacks. So again, the question, Joe Biden, why did you meet with an alleged paymaster of 9/11 and alleged participant in the nuclear black market after the 9/11 attacks? Were you aware of his alleged activities? If you weren't aware of these activities at the time of your meeting, did you hear about them afterwards? Did you make any effort to expose them? If so, who did you inform of your intention to expose these activities? And of course, there's clips in the aforementioned Jason Burmese's new documentary, Fabled Enemies, where he talks to Joe Biden, and he says, that's classified. Finally, on Obama, or rather Biden, here is Joseph Biden on September 10th, 2001. The real threat may come in the belly of a plane. This from Think Progress. Before 9/11, the Bush administration's national security focus was on missile defense, not terrorism. In fact, on 9/11, then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was set to deliver a speech that focused, quote, largely on missile defense. Writing at the Huffington Post, the president of the Plowshares Fund recalls this quote from Biden on September 10th, 2001, warning against the Bush administration's approach. Quote,
We will have diverted all that money to address the least likely threat, while the real threats may come into this country in the hold of a ship, or the belly of a plane, or are smuggled into a city in the middle of the night in a vial in a backpack. And so, the writer, the president of the Plowshares Fund, writing on Huffington Post, says if George Bush had listened to Joe Biden instead of Donald Rumsfeld, the history of the past 7 years would have been very different. We might have prevented 9/11. Very doubtful, my friends. But we, of course, know that mentioning Rumsfeld and mentioning September 10th, Rumsfeld gave a speech that said the Pentagon had lost $2.3 trillion. Now, there's a lot here to go to, and that's why we're still discussing Obama-rama and the DNC charade parade, because there's so much going on around it. But we're now into our number two of episode 89 of MediaMonarchy.com, August 29th, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live, as always, Friday mornings, praradio.org, and Sunday nights, revereradio.info. You can, of course, hear me on KBFR in Boulder and Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, Skype, and IM, with Media Monarchy as your keyword in the podcast anytime, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. Now, we heard Clyde Lewis in that clip earlier mention the four guys arrested for an alleged plot to assassinate Barack Obama at his speech Thursday night at Invesco Field. So this first from WCCO, CBS station KCNC-TV in Denver has learned at least four people are under arrest in connection with a possible plot to kill Barack Obama at his Thursday night acceptance speech in Denver. All are being held on either drug or weapons charges. KCNC-TV investigator Brian Moss reported one of the suspects told authorities they were, quote, going to shoot Obama from a high vantage point using a rifle sighted at 750 yards, end quote. Law enforcement sources tell Moss that one of the suspects was directly asked if they had come to Denver to kill Obama. He responded in the affirmative. So we have updates from the Associated Press that backpedal and say the Obama plot wasn't a credible threat. Authorities are investigating whether a man arrested with rifles, ammo, and drugs in his truck made statements threatening Obama, but emphasized he never posed a credible threat. But if we jump to globalresearch.ca, pointing out that possible Obama assassination plot gets little U.S. coverage, but they go on to detail that in the international press, it got a lot of coverage. So there are reports from the Jerusalem Post, Haaretz, news from Moscow, Lebanese television, and over here, we've got Yahoo News. We also have some interviews with some of these guys. So that's posted up as well. And the last bit under this posting of Denver police investigate possible plot to kill Obama from the Scotsman, again, international press, Nazi link in plot to assassinate Obama. The three men arrested, now it's three, three men arrested over a reported plot to kill the U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama have ties to the white supremacist group Aryan Nation. Sean Robert Adolph, Nathan Johnson, and Theron Gartrell are all said to have links to the group. Adolph, his real name according to police, and the others were arrested on weapons charges after an apparent move to assassinate Obama during his party's convention speech in Denver. All three belong to Aryan Nations, according to Victor Ross, the police chief in Glendale, a suburb of Denver where one of the suspects was arrested. The other two were held in Aurora, another suburb. Quote, we don't usually have that number of Aryan Nations people here, Mr. Ross said. It was suspicious to us. We turned everything over to the federal authorities. Now, I believe the Cryptagon link in there points out that this possibly, probably has the fingerprints of the feds all over it. I'm sure we'll find out there were FBI informants that had infiltrated these guys. But let's see.
We want to talk about a suspected plot, breaking news story. We're going to send it to CBS4's Brian Moss on whether two men were in fact plotting to harm Barack Obama. Brian?
That's a question everybody is asking tonight, Jim. One of the men was arrested in Aurora. The second was arrested in Glendale. Multiple law enforcement sources say they are looking into the possibility The men were involved in some sort of conspiracy to harm presidential candidate Barack Obama. Early Sunday morning, Aurora police arrested 28-year-old Theron Gartrell. He was pulled over for driving erratically. Sources say Gartrell was driving a rented pickup truck. Authorities say in his car they found two rifles, at least one of them with a scope, along with methamphetamine. That arrest then led authorities to the Cherry Creek Hotel in Glendale seeking a second man. When they went to knock on his door also early Sunday morning, they say he broke his sixth-floor window and jumped to the ground, landing on an awning. He was caught a short time later with a broken ankle, according to sources. Authorities have not released the name of that second man who jumped out of the hotel window. The man had just checked into the hotel Saturday night. The Secret Service, the ATF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and now the FBI, all involved in this investigation. The Secret Service says they are interested in the man due to the evidence and how close this all comes to the convention. But multiple law enforcement contacts say today that authorities have more information than that, leading them to believe the man may have been involved in a conspiracy to harm Barack Obama. Several officers I talked to who were in briefings in the last 24 hours say they were told authorities are interested because they are looking into the possibility the man wanted to make an attempt on Obama's life. Again, just a possibility being investigated, but a very serious situation developing tonight. Jim?
Okay, Brian Moss, thanks very much. We're also watching closely how the city is functioning with an event this size.
Theron Gartrell's driver's license, according to police records, indicated that it was suspended. He also listed as being on probation for previous drug charges. Incident to Theron Gartrell's arrest for the traffic violations, the sergeant discovered inside his truck a bulletproof vest, two rifles, ammunition, walkie-talkies, and drugs. Additional information was then developed that led to the arrest of others.
The FBI is investigating a possible threat on Barack Obama's life. Three men described as white supremacists are under arrest in Denver after a routine traffic stop turned up guns and drugs. Let's go to NBC's Tom Costello. He's following the story live from police headquarters. Tom, what do you know at this point? Do investigators think this was a serious, credible threat?
They don't believe it was a credible threat. Federal law enforcement authorities tell us that this all started Sunday at about 1:30 in the morning. Here's what's happened. A police sergeant on routine patrol in a suburb of Denver called Aurora in the big metro area. He pulled over a suspect for driving erratically. Turns out it was a rented car, but the suspect who was driving wasn't registered to have that car. The officer started looking in the car, and here's what he found. Inside, he found a bulletproof vest, two rifles, ammunition, walkie-talkies, methamphetamine, and a scope for one of the rifles. So he placed that suspect under arrest for drugs, and within about 2 to 3 hours, police arrested two more suspects in the metro area, somehow acquaintances of this man. Both of them arrested at area motels. One of them jumped out of a sixth-floor hotel room when the police came knocking. He fell all the way down onto the hotel's awning, slid down, broke his ankle. The police caught him. All three men are now in custody. One of those suspects said the original suspect who was pulled over by police had said he wanted to shoot Obama. However, police say that they don't believe that there was any serious organized attempt to do so. And the FBI and federal authorities tell us they don't believe that there was any sort of a white supremacist plot, although at least one of the suspects, and maybe all three, have ties to white supremacist movement anyway, or leanings in that direction. There was also a juvenile arrested, all of these suspects now being held on drug charges, the original suspects also being held on gun charges. Mika?
Where did you get the idea that Gartrell and Adolf planned to kill Obama at his acceptance speech on Thursday? Very specifically, you said that Adolf was going to shoot Obama from a high vantage point using a .22 250 rifle sighted at 750 yards, and you knew that they'd come to Denver to kill Obama. Where did you get all that information?
I'm basing it off the information that the feds gave me. You know, this ain't just how they presented it. I didn't do it based off that I knew. I'm going off of information that Sean said you were ever going from a... Just on anybody, he always said he'd use a high vantage point. I didn't necessarily say they were going to use Obama or anything like that. I said Sean at points in time before and in conversations before and coming up, you want to be at a higher vantage point or stuff like that. an attempt at taking somebody out. I mean, when the feds came in and laid everything out that had taken place, I'm sorry, and just, you know, how it looked, I could see from their vantage point how, okay, yeah, there's a possibility that they were here to do it. And I said yes to them, Thomas.
Do you think they were planning to assassinate Obama?
I really don't think. After what's been presented in front of me, I wouldn't say it was not possible that they were going to.
Well, let me ask it again and answer me in a more simpler way. Do you think they were really planning to assassinate Senator Obama?
And I can't give you a clear yes or no. I could go either way. I know Sean is in desperate. You know, his situation is desperate. So, you know, I can see it going on. At the same time, it's hard for me to see it. I didn't see him do it, but I guess I could see him, it being possible.
One of the arrested in the alleged plot to assassinate Obama Thursday night. We'll keep an eye on that. I know one thing, now it's back a little ways, that I wanted to mention. The Fox protester clip when they're saying, fuck Fox News. How the reporter kept saying, don't you believe in freedom of speech? I think he has a skewed idea that freedom of speech, the First Amendment, means that you have to talk to Fox News. But I had to point that out. But also, in the last bit clip that we heard about the Obama plot, we heard a couple seconds there from Mika Brzezinski, co-host on Scarborough Country, which, of course, Colbert just pointed out that the weather in Scarborough Country is partly bitchy. But Mika Brzezinski, of course, is the daughter of Barack Obama's string puller, Zbigniew Brzezinski. And that's all I got for the phony left-right paradigm parade. Let's move in now to police state USA, terror drills, curfews, GPS, and IP snooping. First from the New York Daily News, it was only a drill. Terror drill finds culprit with dirty bomb. It was only a drill, but the scenario was still terrifying. A boat loaded with radioactive material sailed through New York Harbor last Friday. A multi-agency task force led by state-of-the-art NYPD boats was assigned to stop the interloper. We're trying to further protect the waterways and ports of New York City from any acts of terrorism or any incidents that may occur. Remember, further conflating terrorism and crime. All crime is terrorism. But if we jump to Wikinews, they've got Canadian military exercise Nanook 2008 traveling through uncharted waters. Operation Nanook 2008 was held from August 11th to the 25th by Canadian forces for the purpose of conducting mock emergency rescue operations for potential maritime disasters in the northeastern Canadian Arctic waters. There's lots of links there, and you can read about what they were using and what they were doing with Operation Nanook. WLNS.com has Michigan holding a mock disease outbreak drill. State officials had a chance to learn what it would be like to respond to a disease outbreak. Wayne Wood of the Michigan Farm Bureau said, quote, the main thing is to get the comfort level of whether we've got the capacity to handle a contagious disease like that and contain it before it spreads. The event was, of course, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Heartland Security. It was part of an emergency training exercise on how to handle a major outbreak of foot and mouth disease that we've pointed out on this show usually comes from a government lab. From the horse's mouth itself, CENTCOM.mil, U.S. Central Command conducts training. Oh, that sounds good. Well, let's see. The United States Central Command has deployed approximately 200 personnel from Tampa to Central Command Forward Headquarters in the Middle East to conduct training on the Continuity of Operations Plan, COOP, or possibly more appropriately, COUP. The training includes the emergency deployment of U.S. CENTCOM headquarters in Tampa to an alternate location forward in the CENTCOM Area of Responsibility, AOR. The alternate command post will provide the commander of U.S. CENTCOM the ability to maintain situational awareness and command and control of contingency operations throughout the U.S. CENTCOM AOR, as well as headquarters and CENTCOM during a natural disaster. That's continuity of government, my friends. That's the shadow government. Continuity of operations plan. But if we jump to WNBC, unmanned drone on Long Island sparks terror investigation. An unmanned drone being built by an engineer on Long Island sparked a large counterterrorism investigation across the New York area. Police said they had stumbled upon overnight testing of the drone at a little-used airstrip in Long Island. The investigation began in February of last year when investigators first learned testing of the drone was underway. Officials said the drone was being designed to carry more than 600 pounds of explosives. Quote, it could be in the air for 8 to 10 hours and there's potential harm if it's carrying a large amount of toxic material, said Crime Boss NYPD Commissioner Raymond Kelly. There is a video. I'm not going to play the audio. We've hit the TSA's terror watch list repeatedly in the last few weeks. But what's worth pointing out, of course, is that all these watch list problems will in the future legitimize a trusted traveler registry database. Again, problem, reaction, solution. Oh, well, there's a problem. There's too many people on the terror list, so we need a way to figure out who's safe. They've got that taken care of. Trusted traveler. If we jump to the New York Times, new guidelines would give FBI broader powers. A Justice Department plan would loosen restrictions on the FBI's ability, or rather allow agents to open national security or criminal investigation against someone without any clear basis for suspicion. And you can jump to the Washington Post. So that's not a conspiracy theory. Little is known about its precise language, but civil liberties advocates say they fear it could give the government even broader license to open terrorism investigations. It can't really get a whole lot more broad. We covered the martial law curfews in Arkansas, but now it's going on in Connecticut. Curfew America hits Hartford, Connecticut. The police state has not arrived quite yet, but it may feel like it to the residents of some American cities where a handful of embattled mayors and police chiefs are imposing strict and sometimes sweeping curfews as a last resort to quell new waves of gun violence this summer. We must do this because we cannot and will not tolerate innocent people, especially children, to be victims, insists Eddie Perez, the mayor of Hartford, the capital of Connecticut, where a nighttime curfew was introduced last week and will remain in effect for a month for those under 18 years old. And of course, they mention the West Helena, Arkansas martial law, and that, of course, the police are enforcing it with night vision goggles and M16 military rifles. Said it before, I'll say it again, the military are taking over our local police and administrations and practicing how to take over our cities. But if we return to threat level, Google privacy practices worse than ISP snooping AT&T charges. So basically AT&T is pointing the finger at Google and saying, no, they spy more than we do. Online advertising networks, particularly Google's, are more dangerous than the fledgling plans and dreams of ISPs to install eavesdropping equipment inside their internet pipes to serve tailored ads to their customers, AT&T says. At least that's what the company told Congress in a letter early this week, responding to four prominent House lawmakers who are bird-dogging ISPs about their online profiling practices. Those lawmakers asked 33 internet companies on August 1st to explain some of their monitoring practices. You can hit up energycommerce.house.gov. The link's there for you. Most have replied, and I've got the letter in PDF for you. But in the letter, AT&T denies that it currently digs deep into the new habits of users, quote, for the purpose of developing a profile of a particular consumer's online behavior. Semantics. It's fun. If we jump to a raw story, Bush protesters get $50,000 in a settlement. State records show that a $50,000 judgment has been awarded to two retired school teachers who were strip searched during a 2004 campaign stop by President Bush. The state appeal board recently approved the out-of-court settlement for Alice McCabe and Christine Nelson. They brought a claim against the Iowa Department of Public Safety after two state troopers arrested them at a rally in Cedar Rapids in September 2004, and of course the charges were later dropped. Again from Raw Story, police using warrantless GPS tracking.
Well, it's a pretty common item for drivers these days, a GPS. It's also proving to be a secret weapon for police departments. Officers are using them to keep tabs on suspected criminals. So is it high-tech crime fighting or an invasion of privacy? Here's CNN's Kate Baldwin.
Karen, Rob, police don't often discuss the tools they use on the streets to catch the bad guys, and this one is no different. But critics say this tactic threatens to trap innocent people as well.
Genius, useful tool.
What once could only be seen in James Bond movies is now a real-life crime-fighting tool for law enforcement. Global Positioning Systems, GPS. Mike Brooks is a former D.C. police detective.
It's a good use of resources. It doesn't put any officers in danger, which is a good thing.
It's a high-tech version of trailing a suspect. But because investigators often track without a warrant, critics label it a Big Brother tactic.
Law enforcement has a legitimate right to try to solve crimes and track suspects, provided that there are protections so that the innocent are not improperly snooped upon.
So how does this work? Well, it's pretty simple and made to be so. This is one of the devices law enforcement use. You simply put in the batteries, attach it to the car, and off they go. Police easily along for the ride, tracking their suspect in real time from their computer.
Court documents show that is what Fairfax County, Virginia police did to follow David Lee Fultz Jr. in February without a warrant. Fultz, who served time in prison for rape, is now facing trial for abduction and sexual battery. His attorney won't discuss the case, but tried to get the GPS evidence thrown out of court. He says it constitutes illegal search and seizure, a violation of his client's Fourth Amendment right.
Before an intrusion of this magnitude, of this tracking, a judicial officer should make the final decision on who can be tracked and for how long.
The police involved would only say there is an internal review before GPS tracking can be used. Privacy advocates say that's not enough as police departments across the country begin utilizing this virtually undetectable device.
The Supreme Court has yet to address warrantless GPS tracking, so the legal standards vary from state to state. Most allow it or haven't ruled on it, but Washington and Oregon, for example, have ruled that police need a warrant before using GPS. Karen, Rob?
Kate Baldwin for us, thanks. Well, actually, even scarier is that virtually anyone can buy and use a GPS tracking device to secretly track someone else's whereabouts. Not to give you a lot of information if you're planning to do it, but apparently online they're as low as $200.
Amazing how
all thinking
things.
Is teenagers. You give them the driver's license, mm-hmm. You give them the keys to the car. Stuff on that.
It's just a matter of time before your kids are teenagers. You have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
And in a related story, of course, we went over on episode 87, New York's Operation Sentinel, a project of the New York Police Department, which would have every vehicle in Manhattan tracked by a series of license plate scanners, is cause for fury among some New York City residents. Details of the program were reported by Raw Story on August 12th. A similar security grid is being developed for Washington, D.C., In an August 19th report, BBC's Wendy Urquhart found that while some are accepting of the plan's invasive measures, others are not taking the news so lightly.
At least a million cars, trucks, and buses cross into Manhattan every single day of the year, and the authorities say it's about time they knew who's coming into New York and why they're there. The counterterrorism unit has come up with a plan to install 116 license plate readers and 3,000 closed-circuit cameras on the 16 bridges and 4 tunnels that link Manhattan to the suburbs, which the NYPD says are necessary to protect the city.
It is a comprehensive security program to protect the lower Manhattan area, indeed all of Manhattan, from vehicle-borne explosive devices. It's one means to help us do that by recording license plates. Those plates will only be maintained in our database for 30 days. It'll be expunged after 30 days.
Some people believe that increasing security across the city is a good idea, but others are furious that their lives are being scrutinized.
It's just more like being under communist reign instead of being in a free country and being able to choose where you want to go, when you want to go, and not be monitored at all times. I don't think it's right.
I mean, if you don't have anything to worry about, you won't work. True?
I think so.
Now, if you're trying to have something that's getting your license plate, you have a problem, then it's good reason.
Operation Sentinel is part of a multi-million dollar scheme designed to ramp up security in the wake of the September 11th attacks in 2001. But convincing the public that installing hundreds of cameras across the city is for their benefit won't be easy. Wendy Urquhart, BBC News.
Oh, it's a scheme, all right. Moving on, but staying on the BBC, Lockerbie evidence not disclosed. Scottish police had information that might have changed the outcome of the Lockerbie bombing trial. A BBC TV program has learned the conspiracy files. The information could have affected the credibility of key witness, or rather of key evidence, but was not passed to the defense team. Libyan national Abdelbaset Ali Mohamed al-Megrahi. All you need is the last name, M-E-G-R-A-H-I. Megrahi is serving life for killing 270 people in the 1988 Lockerbie bombing. A prosecution witness had seen a picture linking al-Megrahi to the bombing before he identified him. In the flashback to last December, Hollywood to frame Iran for Lockerbie, involving Steven Spielberg and the Mossad, of course. But if we now jump to Raw Story, Halliburton sued for human trafficking, not a surprise. And of course, the flashback, the classic article, DynCorp Halliburton sex slave scandal won't go away. That goes way back to May 2006. 12 men recruited in Nepal died after forced transfer to Iraq. A law firm says 13 Nepali men were recruited and held against their will for 13 months in a human trafficking scheme engineered and perpetrated by Halliburton and its Jordanian contractor. The Nepali men, each between the ages of 18 and 27, were allegedly hired as kitchen staff by then Halliburton subsidiary KBR and its Jordanian subcontractor Daoud and Partners. Once they arrived in Jordan, however, their passports were seized and they were dispatched to Iraq. Quote, tragically, as the men were being transported to Iraq, a car containing 12 of the men was stopped by members of the Ansar al-Sunni Army, an insurgent group. The Washington law firm Cohen, Milstein, Hausfeld, and Toll writes, with a link for you. The 12 men in the car were taken hostage and executed by the insurgents. The executions were filmed and posted on the internet. The Inspector General for the United States Department of Defense investigated and confirmed the facts related to the fate of the 12 men, which led to increased enforcement of anti-trafficking measures by the United States. And only one guy survived. So again, whether it's DynCorp or Halliburton or KBR or any of their tentacles, they're involved in human trafficking. Fact. If we jump now to some of the latest updates on the anthrax cover-up. This is Anthrax Updates, Leahy, Boyle, Grassley cover-ups, and two groups. First from Empty Wheel, Leahy not satisfied with the anthrax investigation, like Jay Live we heard at the top of the episode. The biggest news from a blogger chat with Patrick Leahy at the DNC today came in response to a question I threw out as we adjourned about whether or not he was convinced with the FBI's case in the anthrax case. We had this exchange. Empty Wheel said, "Do you think Ivan's acted alone? Are you convinced Ivan sent the anthrax letters?" Leahy, "No, I'm not satisfied. I think someone was involved either before or after. I'm not satisfied with the answers I've gotten." I suggested he had seen significantly more evidence than the public had seen, and he gave him a funny look. Not sure what that meant. He said the SJC will do a hearing with Mueller in mid-September. Leahy expects some hard questions from both Democrats and Republicans, and I'm sure we'll see that. Steve Watson has the report of Dr. Francis A. Boyle, who went on the Alex Jones Show a couple days ago. Government biological weapons legislator, anthrax inside job cover-up continuing. A former government biological weapons legislator appeared on nationally syndicated Alex Jones Show to discuss his detailed knowledge of the cover-up of the 2001 anthrax attacks, which he is adamant were perpetrated by criminal elements of the U.S. government in an attempt to foment a police state by killing off opposition to hardline post-9/11 legislation. And of course, Patrick Leahy was one of the unfortunate few to receive some anthrax letters. Dr. Francis A. Boyle literally helped write the law with regards to terrorism, as he was responsible for drafting the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, with a link for you, and it was passed unanimously by both houses of Congress and signed into law by President Poppy Bush. If we jump to Glenn Greenwald of Salon, I've been subscribing to his podcast, and he had a good one several days ago. Senator
GOP Senator Charles Grassley of Ohio, who, to his credit, has been the leading critic in the Senate of the FBI's anthrax legislation, or lack thereof.
My guest this morning is Charles Grassley, the Republican senator from Iowa, who, among other things, is a member of the Senate Finance and Judiciary Committees. And we're speaking today about the numerous questions surrounding the anthrax investigation. Senator Grassley, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be with you, and thank you for your interest in this issue.
Absolutely. Now, you've been very persistent in demanding answers from the FBI about the anthrax investigation, answers which haven't really been very forthcoming. And I want to begin with a general question. There's lots of sort of unsolved garden variety cases that the FBI works on. Do you look at the anthrax attacks as being of greater significance than the ordinary crime, meriting more accountability, more Senate oversight? And if so, can you talk about why you see it that way?
Yeah, I think it is very much more important, because one thing is a member of Congress and an attack on an institution of our government through which the anthrax was when senators were attacked ought to be something that has a high priority, because if people get away with that, there's other things that can be done, even other anthrax things that can be done, and consequently somebody might do it, and it has the effect of, could have the effect of shutting down a branch of government, which has an impact on the entire nation as a whole. And also I see it from the standpoint of a test of the FBI's credibility.
Well, speaking of that, on August 7th, just a couple weeks ago, you wrote a letter to Attorney General Mukasey and FBI Director Mueller, in which he stated, quote, "This has been a long investigation full of missteps and mistakes. There's been too much secrecy up to this point, and it deserves a full and thorough vetting. There are clearly a lot of unanswered questions, and it's time to start a dialogue so we get answers." And you then listed 18 questions that you have about the investigation, the last one of which was, quote, "What additional documents will be released, if any, and when will they be released?" Now, first of all, have you received a response from either the Justice Department or the FBI to that letter?
No, and I assume one of the reasons I haven't is because in the meantime, the FBI has consented to a hearing that Senator Leahy's having, and a hearing is one instrument of doing it. At the time I wrote the letter, I didn't know whether it'd be a hearing or not, and I wanted to make sure that as one individual senator who's not chairman of the Judiciary Committee, that I would do my own oversight and get answers to questions. It could be that the forum for answering my letter would be the hearing, but I want to make sure my 18 questions are answered one way or the other, and I want to assure that every document's out. If this case is solved the way the FBI wants us to believe that it's solved, is it closed? And if it's closed, then everything ought to be brought out into the open. And one of the problems we have right now is with the FBI, there's just too much secrecy. And getting all the documents out, getting all the information out, is important. I just recently read where Senator Daschle, who was one of the people hit by anthrax, was briefed, and the news reports seemed to indicate some level of satisfaction. We're all entitled to a level of satisfaction. The entire country wants to know that the FBI is doing its job and that their life from anthrax being in letters is not in danger. And so getting all this information out, less secrecy, there's no reason for any point not to be answered.
Exactly. Senator Grassley, more on the anthrax cover-up if we jump to Alex Constantine and his ongoing series, Project Anthrax and the Cover-Up. Here's part 6, Vaxgen's Donald Francis and AIDS, the Thai experiments, and the mailings as fascist clinical trials. And we're just going to get a little taste of it. That's a lot to digest. The anthrax mailings and the development of vaccines were inseparable projects. These involved animal and human experimentation. On August 3rd, 2008, USA Today explained the work that Dr. Ivins did at Fort Detrick, specifically terminal animal experiments. Quote, Ivins performed research that required exposing research animals to airborne anthrax, according to a 1998 report in the journal Vaccine. The goal was to test whether a new vaccine could guard against the anthrax inhaled in a bioterrorist attack. The strain of anthrax employed in Ivan's vaccine experiments was a wet form sprayed into the faces of macaque monkeys through a mask. If we jump to George Washington, by way of 9/11 blogger, top anthrax expert, maybe there's two groups of anthrax killers. William Patrick, with a link for you to his entry over on historycommons.org, is the leading U.S. expert on weaponizing anthrax and has multiple patients in anthrax, or rather patents, in anthrax weaponization. Patrick made an interesting point in a November 2001 article in, again, USA Today. Further complicating things, the spores contained in the first attack on a Florida media company have been directly described by investigators as a clumpy powder, which would make a poor aerosol. Only 2 weeks later, the finely prepared Dashiell letter spores appeared. Those spores were ground so fine that they apparently drifted across offices and contaminated other letters in the mail. The same strain of anthrax was used in all the attacks, suggesting a common source. Those bioterrorists must have had a hell of a short learning curve, says Patrick, who headed the U.S. bioweapons work until the program's halt in 1969. Or maybe there's two groups. That's a quote from William Patrick. In other words, either a single killer or a group of killers went from a crude anthrax preparation to an extremely advanced weaponized form of anthrax in 2 weeks. Or there were two groups of killers. So either the 19 guys made amazing advance work on learning how to fly in the 2 weeks, or in the weeks before 9/11, or there were two groups. Again, USA Today, Ivins tried to mislead FBI on anthrax. The FBI said that Bruce Ivins, the bioscientist whom they say launched the 2001 anthrax attacks, helped them figure out how to collect the anthrax samples needed for the investigation. On February 27, 2002, Ivins submitted a sample that didn't meet those standards. The FBI destroyed his sample without testing it. So if we jump to the AP, FBI admits it destroyed evidence in anthrax case. FBI scientists early on had, but destroyed, the unique strain of anthrax used in the deadly 2001 attacks that years later would lead them to Dr. Bruce Ivins. Sure. If we jump again to 9/11 blogger, why people who question the anthrax attacks won't question 9/11. And he brings out a couple points, like 9/11 involved a much greater loss of life, whereas only 5 people died in anthrax attacks. While none of us have seen gruesome images of the victims of the anthrax attacks, we watched horrific images of 9/11 over and over and over again. 9/11 was the first attack on the U.S. by foreign terrorists. As such, it was the point at which America took the fork in the road away from traditional notions of liberty, justice, and the Geneva Convention and towards the GWAT. And the other point is, 9/11 and the anthrax attacks and the government's investigation into both were actually very similar in many ways. And again, that's coming from georgewashington.blogspot.com. If we return to historycommons.org with new additions to their complete 9/11 timeline, it's massive, and I just have like one paragraph for you here. Most of the new entries published by the 9/11 timeline this week deal with the anthrax scare. The main drug used to combat anthrax was Cipro, which a high government official, Jerome Hauer, advised some reporters to take shortly after 9/11. Although an inquiry was launched into a cover-up of problems with it in May 2000, the FDA endorsed the drug 2 months later. Hoax letters similar to the later anthrax mailings were sent to Fox News from 2000, and one may have been received by a Florida tabloid in mid-September 2001. The anthrax attacks are associated with the Patriot Act, which Democratic Senator Russ Feingold blocked on October 9th. Two other Democratic senators were then targeted by the killer, and 28 congressional staffers tested positive for the disease. Congress then passed the bill without reading it. And most of the active phrases that I just read for you are all links and new additions to the completely documented complete 9/11 timeline on historycommons.org. Finally, here in the anthrax updates, this from PetersNewYork.com. Anthrax fall guy Ivins reminds Frederick, Maryland locals of the Frank Olson suicide, quote-unquote, case of 50 years ago. The story of Frank Olson was documented in the months before 9/11 in an article in the New York Times Magazine section, with a link for you to read that full thing. Written by his son's Harvard schoolmate, Michael Ignatieff, we learn from the story that, quote, Frank Olson's specialty had been the development of aerosols for the delivery of anthrax. In the years immediately preceding his death, Olson was one of the top officials at the government's biological weapons laboratory at Fort Detrick. So if you don't know, in 1953, Olson was found on a New York City sidewalk, his body bloodied and broken, apparently after a fall from his hotel room. The details of his death, ruled a suicide, remained a mystery for more than 20 years. But in 1975, an article in the Washington Post, with a link for you, revealed that, contained in a report issued by then-recently concluded U.S. President's Commission on CIA Activities, I believe that was a church committee, was an account of a scientist who had been administered a dose of LSD without his knowledge, suffered side effects from the drug, went to New York under CIA escort for psychological treatment, and jumped out of a hotel room window. That's Frank Olson. O-L-S-O-N. Deeper down and down and down the rabbit hole. If we now jump to all the latest 9/11 cover-up updates. 9/11, KSM, New Clues, The Steel Cross, NIST, and WTC7, first from the People's Voice, The Financial Times, and the self-confessed mastermind of 9/11. The Financial Times, once the liberal, enlightened voice of the financial elite, in contrast to the aggressively neoconservative Wall Street Journal, has yielded to the totalitarian militarist temptation. The feature article of the weekend supplement of August 16th and 17th, The Face of 9/11, embraces the forced confession of a 9/11 suspect elicited through 5 years of hideous torture in the confines of secret prisons. So now, the FT, the Financial Times, owns up to being a propaganda vehicle for a CIA program to discredit the suspect while he stands trial based on confessions obtained through torture. From beginning to end, the article categorically states that the principal defendant, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, is the, quote, self-confessed mastermind of 9/11. The first half of the article is full of trivia, designed to provide a human interest feel to the courtroom and the proceedings, and a bizarre mix discussing Khalid's nose to the size of the courtroom. The Financial Times and KSM. Hammering further the official story into your brains. Another great article from the great Jerry Mazza. This is called A New 9/11 Clue. Recently, an email drifted in about an article that Jerry Mazza had wrote called What Were the Mossad Doing with Fraudulent New Zealand Passports? The writer said, I've known about this for some time, that the Mossad was involved in murdering our troops in a variety of methods to keep them there so we could finish the job by destroying Syria and Iran. For years now, I've suspected and now know for sure the Mossad had a lot to do with the 9/11 attacks on the WTC. The attached MP3 is a recording of the NYPD radio transmissions on 9/11. Listen from the 3-minute mark almost to the end. And, of course, this was never reported in the media. So let's listen, see if you can make it out, and then we'll talk about it.
That's, I got a message on that plane. It's a big truck with a mural painted of an airplane diving into New York City and exploding. I don't know what's in the truck. The truck is in between 6th and 7th on King Street.
I said, for, I'll send you the password there for whiskey.
Surprise! You fucked up. With a mural painted, an airplane diving into New York, blowing up. Two men got out of the truck, ran away from it. We got those two boots under.
That's good. You got those? Are you holding those two guys, Kate?
We got them under. Let's get some music going here. Listen to that. The fucking beat the shit out of them.
Fucking fuck. All right, you listen, you need any further on those two guys over there? You all right over there, Kate?
We have both suspects under, K. We have the suspects who drove in the van exploded. We have both of them under, K. Let's get some help over here.
Nah, I'm sending you here to shoot it. I just want to make sure you and your guys are all right over there, K. That's all.
What's the location, Rack? Put them up. You know, we have both PO transit driven that exploded. Resurrect?
What location?
The location, kid.
In the melange of scratchy voices bumping each other off and on, around minute three, the words remote-controlled plane bump through clearly, are interrupted, and finally assert quite clearly again that, quote, there's a big truck on King Street with the mural of an airplane painted on it diving into New York City and exploding. It was later noted, quote, King Street between 6th and 7th Avenues, end quote, about a mile north of the World Trade Center, which is in a direct line of sight from King Street and 6th Avenue. Did you ever hear that story? So check it out. The van with the mural, or whether it was the exploding van, or the white van with Israelis, or the dancing Mossad agents. But let's jump to Raw Story, Raw Replay, and this is an interesting one. But let's get hoodwinked in Shanksville.
A cross made out of steel beams from the World Trade Center now stands near the site where Flight 93 crashed in western Pennsylvania on September 11th, 2001.
Who would ever think that people would be touching it? It's like it's the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, it's unbelievable.
A ceremony included bikers who hoped their presence would draw attention to the scene.
I don't think there was an American around that didn't see it on TV or have some kind of impact from when it happened.
Two-ton, 14-foot-high beam is sitting on a base shaped like the Pentagon.
It's a great, combination of the three events and tied by tragedy.
Scores of current and retired FDNY firefighters traveled to Shanksville from Brooklyn's Floyd Bennett Field to deliver the beam on Saturday.
I was there that day, and of course it's a day that everyone remembers where they were, and we lost five guys in my firehouse.
The memorial is not part of the official $58 million Flight 93 National Memorial. United Airlines Flight 93 was brought down by hijackers just outside Shanksville, about 40 minutes into its flight from Newark, New Jersey. Or Larisi, Associated Press.
Hoodwinked in Shanksville, but now last bit of 9/11 updates, a little more on the NIST WTC7 report, shameful, embarrassing, and completely flawed. There's a new article up from Paul Joseph Watson, again, further debunking the debunking about NIST's new report about World Trade Center Building 7. There's also another video from CNN, but I believe we played one last week, and I think that one's only slightly different. But it's all there, and you can check it out, 9/11 Mystery Solved. And what would a week of MediaMonarchy.com be without some kind of update on JFK? And of course, with all the swirling conflagrations of Obama and JFK planting that meme in your brain. Posted up under JFK, students honored for bullet study and a new exhibit. First, from the UPI, study of JFK assassination bullets honored. Three Texas A&M University faculty members were honored for a study challenging the lone gunman theory in the assassination of JFK. Statistics professors Cliff Williams James. I may have garbled that. Their names are up there. The statistic professors, they analyzed the makeup of bullets that came from the same production batch as the ones recovered after the 63 shooting in Dallas. The trio received the 2008 Statistics in Chemistry Award from the American Statistical Association for their work showing that the metallic compounds of the fatal bullets weren't as unique as originally thought. Quote, using new compositional analysis techniques not available in the 60s, the team determined that the bullet fragments involved in the assassination are not nearly as rare as previously reported, leading to the recommendation that the bullet fragments be reanalyzed. So the related story and some of the audio and video that you can click through and link through, but initially from WBZ, The Making of a President, JFK's Growth as a Politician, shown in a well-timed exhibit at the JFK Library and Museum.
So what does it take to be president of the United States? The JFK Presidential Library tackling that topic with a new exhibit that just opened up. Sarah Kanji is live outside the library today with a look at President Kennedy's road to the White House. That has to be interesting here, Sarah.
It is, David. This exhibit really shows what shaped JFK into the president we came to know. And what you will learn is that road to the White House he took is not that much different from what we see the candidates today.
Present the United States Senator John F. Kennedy story.
The early chapters in that story are on display at the JFK Library and Museum. The exhibit called The Making of a President shows experiences that shaped Kennedy's life. And for the first time, we're seeing journals he kept while traveling the world.
I was struck by how curious, what a curious mind he had.
His journals reveal how much he learned while abroad, not only from dignitaries, but ordinary people.
Wherever he was, he would take time to talk to shopkeepers and people he met in restaurants or in hotels and get their sense of what they thought was happening in their part of the world.
Worldly views and war service, themes that shaped the 35th president, themes we are hearing today as we elect the 44th president.
At the conventions, so much of it is about biography and learning about the candidates running for office. What is it about them that that's prepared them to be president?
So this is a very timely exhibit, and if you don't catch it during this presidential election cycle, it'll still be around through next summer. David.
Sarah, no question. We are a JFK-hungry city. We're always looking for new information on the former president, and this exhibit apparently has some information about his time at Harvard as well.
Right. It includes many of his class notes as a student there, and also a report card which shows he got a D in history his sophomore year.
Ah, we have something in common. Very nice. Maybe I could be president someday after all.
Maybe.
Sarah Congee, thank you so much outside the library this afternoon. You can watch the DNC speeches live on our website tonight. You can also watch highlights on demand, and you can read John Keller's unconventional convention blog. It's all on WBZTV.com/politics.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to be president. If we jump to the AFP agency French Press, here's an interesting one. Organized crime dumping weak U.S. dollar for the euro. The weakened U.S. dollar has fallen out of favor with organized crime groups to pay for drug shipments or to settle scores, a Canadian government report said last Friday. And if the greenback continues its slide in 2008, as expected, more and more criminals are likely to exchange euros for illicit goods, said the Criminal Intelligence Service Canada in its annual report. And there's the 2-meg PDF for you to download. Quote, the U.S. dollar weakened significantly against other major currencies in 07, and according to some economists, is expected to depreciate further in 08. As a consequence, other currencies, particularly the euro, are poised to weaken the U.S. dollar's dominance as the currency of choice for international remittances and payments. This trend could also drive an increase in observed instances of bulk cash transfers denominated in currencies other than Canadian and U.S. dollars. So, you know, when organized crime is getting out of the dollar, that something's probably up. We must look abroad to the proxy wars, U.S. and Russia, with Georgia involved. So if we hit up the Irish Times, Russian and U.S. warships engaged in Black Sea standoff. Russian and U.S. warships were engaged in a Black Sea standoff amid Western warnings that the conflict in Georgia could destabilize other parts of Moscow's old empire. A U.S. Coast Guard cutter carrying aid docked at the Georgian port of Batumi after bypassing the Russian-controlled port of Poti, P-O-T-I. Two other U.S. Navy vessels were offshore in the Black Sea. Meanwhile, 155 miles north, Russian warships landed in the separatist region of Abkhazia. This is bad. We can pay a lot of attention to, again, the phony left-right WWF presidential selection. But now we're getting into the dirt. We're talking about our dollar dying. We're talking about war with Russia. It's fucking insane. These aren't, you know, cow heads and caves. So if we jump to the Times Online, tensions rise as Putin talks of Black Sea confrontation. A new Cold War between Russia and the West grew steadily closer after the Kremlin gave a warning about, quote, direct confrontation between American and Russian warships in the Black Sea. Dmitry Peskov, a spokesman for Vladimir Putin, the prime minister, declared that Russia was taking measures of precaution against American and NATO naval ships. Quote, let's hope we do not see any direct confrontation in that. He also said that any attempt by countries in the West to isolate Russia would, quote, definitely harm the economic interests of those states. And speaking of that, if we jump to the Telegraph, again, the international press, Russia may cut oil flow to the West. Fears are mounting that Russia may restrict oil deliveries to Western Europe over coming days in response to the threat of EU sanctions and NATO naval actions in the Black Sea. Any such move would be a dramatic escalation of the Georgia crisis and play havoc with the oil markets.
The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Dallas docked in the Georgian port of Batumi carrying 34 tons of humanitarian aid. The arrival there avoided Georgia's primary cargo port, which is now controlled by Russian soldiers.
We had all the options on the table, and the decision was made to go to Batumi. We wanted to make sure the goods, the humanitarian supplies, arrived in a safe and expeditious manner, and we arrived in Batumi in order to do that.
Had an American ship docked in the port at Poti, it would have been seen as a direct challenge to Russia. Meanwhile, Western leaders continue to assail Russia for violating Georgia's territorial sovereignty by entering the rebel regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. German Chancellor Angela Merkel called Russian President Dmitry Medvedev Wednesday. She pressed him to immediately fulfill the ceasefire by pulling all troops out of Georgia. Russia is supposed to withdraw to positions held before August 7th.
Nous ne pouvons pas accepter.
France's foreign minister said we cannot accept these violations of international law. Georgia also announced that it will drastically reduce staff at its embassy in Moscow.
Georgia will reduce its diplomatic ties with the Russian Federation to its possible minimum, which means that we will downgrade it to level of envoys, and we'll have only two diplomats working in Russia.
While the conflict between Russia and Georgia continues, people who live in the disputed region say life is far from returning to normal. Matt Friedman, The Associated Press.
All right, let's keep going here. Let's keep going here. Let's keep going here. Let's dive back into the homeland of America and jump to the Daily Oklahoman with a look at a new book called In Reckless Hands. In Reckless Hands looks at Oklahoma's history of eugenics. Oklahomans may be surprised to learn the state shares a dark past with Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. Eugenics, the wonder science of the early 1900s, hailed by academics worldwide as a means to improve race by sterilizing those who possessed serious heredity defects, was also embraced by Governor Alfalfa Bill Murray. This book, In Reckless Hands, Skinner v. Oklahoma and the Near Triumph of American Eugenics, by Victoria F. Norse, N-O-U-R-S-E, examines how a scientific theory about nature was transformed into the basis of a social policy ordained by the power of the state of Oklahoma. The case's backdrop began in 1927 when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a forced sterilization of a feeble-minded girl in the case of Buck v. Bell. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough." And that's a quote. The law deferred to the state of Virginia's right to regulate health and safety. Jack Skinner, 24, held in the McAllister prison for stealing 23 chickens and armed robbery, challenged the 1935 Oklahoma law that mandated sterilization for undesirable persons in prison or state asylums. Subject to the law were three-time repeat criminals or the feeble-minded. The law mandated his sterilization before he could return to society after his sentence was satisfied. The book's title comes from a line in the 1942 U.S. Supreme Court decision of Skinner v. Oklahoma, striking down this Oklahoma law, warning that, quote, "in reckless hands, an entire race or types might wither and disappear." Not coincidentally, this was the year Nazis were trying to eradicate the Jewish race on the theory of natural inferiority. Ideas have consequences, and bad ideas can produce horrible consequences. Yet, as late as the 1960s, more than 100,000 people had been sterilized under U.S. federal health and welfare programs. So, Victoria Norse, a law college professor at Emory University, provides a fascinating study of the gritty and determined Oklahoma lawyers who took Skinner's case to the nation's highest court. This book should appeal to general readers of Oklahoma history and those interested in the modern science of genetics, or eugenics, which likewise promises a better future through the selection of desirable genetic traits. Will the history of human engineering repeat itself? So that's excellent work from the Oklahoman in writing up this book, In Reckless Hands, getting the idea out there again. Eugenics, Hitler, Margaret Sanger, Galton, Huxley, Wells, all those elitists were all about eugenics. And one of the things involved in all that is one-child forced abortion kind of population. So let's jump to China. The Beijing Olympics end as countdown to 2012 begins. So first from McClatchy, Beijing closes Olympic Games with another spectacle. This article is completely ridiculous. I think I only posted it up because of all the bizarre things inside this. So, the most expensive and lavish Olympic Games in history comes to a close as Beijing officially passed the Olympic flame to London, which begins the countdown for the London Olympics in 2012. And the British say that those games will be frugal but fun. To the deafening roar of fireworks, Beijing marked the end of the summer games that brought it a record bounty of 51 gold medals and seized global sports supremacy from the United States. A little more than an hour into the ceremony, Beijing Mayor Guo Jinlong handed the Olympic flag to International Olympic Committee Chief Jacques Rogge, who immediately passed it on to Boris Johnson, London's beaming mop-haired mayor. Then it was London's turn. As British Prime Minister Gordon New World Order Brown watched from the stadium gallery, British designers took over a portion of the evening ceremony and brought with them a legendary figure in rock music, sporting icon, and some wry British humor. Here we go. A real double-decker London bus drove into the Bird's Nest Stadium. Of course, people died building the thing, but China covered it up. Peeling open like a blossoming flower to reveal a stage. On it was Jimmy Page, the Led Zeppelin guitarist, playing the classic Whole Lotta Love. Moments later, David Beckham, the soccer icon, arrived to kick a soccer ball into a crowd of athletes. Beckham scored a huge ovation. Tens of thousands of Britons watched the ceremony in live broadcasts on 30 giant screens around the British Isles, including in London's Trafalgar Square.
An den genialen Gitarrensong von ihm hier und seiner Band, Jimmy Page, Led Zeppelin, Whole Lotta Love.
I'm sorry, I had to do that to you. It was too ridiculous not to post. 2012, Jimmy Page, the masses watching jumbo telescreens in the public square. It's all too much. And also, I think it's a really fitting follow-up to Jimmy Page's stellar work with Puff Daddy and the Godzilla soundtrack. Apparently, he's not content with the destruction of his legend. But anyway, I digress. Let's return to Blackwater Worldwide. Remember, it's not Blackwater USA anymore. They're worldwide. Everything's global. Everyone's pulled up stakes, got their money out. The Goodfellas are burning the bar down, going global. The UPI has an article, Blackwater Worldwide, the Walmart of modern war. Say whatever you want about Blackwater Worldwide, and hardly a day goes by when something isn't being said about it. It does not put all its eggs in one basket. Long before the company's recent announcement that it would seek to de-emphasize its personal security work in the future, it had created a diversified corporate structure. To use military terminology, it is a combined arms operation. While most attention is focused on Blackwater Security Consulting, the unit that provides contractors for work in Iraq and elsewhere, there is far more to it than that. Blackwater has long sought to be the one-stop shopping center, a sort of Walmart for all the U.S. government's military outsourcing needs. And a review of its business units shows it has gone a long way toward meeting that goal. Now, we can hit up some of the links in there, like to Raw Story and otherwise, and you can read about how they've started their own private intelligence agency. But let's listen to a couple minutes from the man whose name I think is synonymous with exposing Blackwater. This is Jeremy Scahill.
Blackwater originally came out in February of 2007. Now we're putting out a newly revised and updated edition of the book in paperback form. And in this updated version, we have about 100 pages of new material. The book opens with a comprehensive description of what happened at Nisr Square on September 16, 2007. A small white Opel sedan being driven by a young Iraqi medical student pulled into an intersection in the Mansour district of Baghdad. A convoy of armored vehicles is driving down the wrong side of the street in that same intersection. Well, this particular car did not stop fast enough in the eyes of men in the armored vehicle. One of the gunmen atop the armored vehicles fires through the windshield and shoots this young Iraqi medical student in the head. That shooting began a 15-minute shooting spree during which some 17 Iraqi civilians were killed, among them women and children. And the men who did the shooting in those armored vehicles, they were in fact armed operatives working for Blackwater. It would go down as the worst, most violent incident involving private forces in Iraq to date in the Iraq War. And yet none of the men who did the shooting have faced any charges for what they've done. And in fact, Blackwater's contract was extended in April of 2008 for another year in Iraq. This is a company that has been accused of murdering Iraqi civilians, of shooting the bodyguard to the Iraqi vice president, of causing blowback attacks on United States troops, on hurting morale of the United States military, that has cost U.S. taxpayers over $1 billion for its operations in Iraq. Right now in Iraq, you have 150,000 United States troops deployed in the country. You have 180,000 private contractors. That means that the U.S. military is the junior partner in the coalition that's occupying Iraq. One of Blackwater's newest projects, which could prove to be one of its most profitable and most controversial, is that Blackwater started a private intelligence company, a private CIA, essentially called Total Intelligence Solutions. And the man running Total Intelligence Solutions is J. Cofer Black. He was a 30-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency. He also was the guy who ran the CIA's extraordinary rendition program, the government-sanctioned kidnap and torture program. His 30-year CIA career, his network of contacts, his knowledge that was gained through his work in the most sensitive areas of the running of the United States government is now on the open market for hire. And they're marketing their services to not only foreign governments, but to Fortune 500 corporations. This isn't a liberal or conservative thing. You have a lot of traditional conservatives who are outraged at what they see as degradation of the United States Armed Forces through the actions of these private forces in Iraq. This has everything to do with the future of war making and global stability. What does this say about the future of the nation state? You know, Bush has replaced a coalition of willing nations with a coalition of billing corporations. So we have a lot of growing up to do in this country when it comes to really taking on the forces that are doing the most damage around the world in all of our names and with our money, the taxpayer money.
Further exposing the corrupt mercenaries of Blackwater, that's Jeremy Scahill. Moving forward to new yet rerun episodes of Collateral News. I hadn't posted them before, so they're new to me, so they'll be new to you. So we got Collateral News, episode 55, 10 Steps to Fascism, a summary of America's descent into fascism as described in Naomi Wolf's book of last year, The End of America, Letters of Warning to a Young Patriot. And on a different note, we have episode 56, The Plastic Vortex. Our addiction to single-use plastic is creating havoc in the oceans, graphically illustrated by the Great Garbage Patch in the Pacific, an area of floating trash twice the size of Texas.
If the American experiment in democracy was ending, how would we know? A new argument from a respected writer says that America is becoming fascist right before our eyes. But most of us are either unwilling to accept it or too scared to confront it. Welcome to Collateral. New book titled The End of America, Letters of Warning to a Young Patriot, outlines 10 shifts open societies undergo in some form as they descend into fascism. She argues that all 10 are currently occurring in the United States at different rates. Welcome to Collateral. Today's story is about the world's biggest plastic dump, and it's not in a landfill.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you know?
There's a great future in plastics.
40 years later, the future is here. And with respect to plastics, it's not so great. In the northeastern Pacific Ocean lies one of the world's great unnatural wonders. It's been dubbed the Great Garbage Patch, a vast swath of ocean littered with plastic debris drawn there by a swirling vortex of currents. It measures more than 540,000 square miles, or more than twice the size of Texas. Fish, turtles, birds, and other marine life ingest all sorts of plastic crap near this vast wasteland, which often remains trapped in their bodies until they die. The young are most susceptible, and they frequently die when plastic blocks their digestive tracts. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
The latest from Collateral News, episode 55 and 56. But now let's jump to a batch of news from our neighbors to the south, soon to be our partners in the North American Union. But first, from the Washington Times, ICE abandons self-deportation program for illegals. With only 8 takers since the program's creation this month, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has decided to scrap its self-deportation program for illegal immigrants who had previously ignored court orders to leave the country. The pilot program, which began August 5th in 5 cities, officially ended last Friday. It had been offered to the more than 457,000 illegal immigrants nationwide who ignored judicial orders to leave the country. Known as, quote, scheduled departure, with a link for you, the plan gave illegal immigrants facing deportation a total of 90 days to turn themselves into ICE, allowing them to plan their departure date and to coordinate their travel plans with relatives instead of facing the prospect of being arrested, detained, and deported. So, yeah, big surprise, the Turn Yourself In program didn't work. But if we jump to Fox News, here's something related. Illegal immigrants returning to Mexico in record numbers. Illegal immigrants are returning home to Mexico in numbers not seen for decades, and the Mexican government may have to deal with a crush on its social services and lower wages once the immigrants arrive. That sounds familiar. The Mexican consulate's office in Dallas is seeing increasing numbers of Mexican nationals requesting paperwork to go home for good, especially parents who want to know what documentation they'll need to enroll their children in Mexican schools. These numbers have increased percentage-wise tremendously, said Enrique Hubbard, the Mexican consul general in Dallas. In fact, it's almost 100% more this year than it was in the previous 2 years. The illegal immigrant population in the U.S. has dropped 11% since August of last year, according to the Center for Immigration Studies. Its research shows 1.3 million illegal immigrants have returned to their home countries. Some say illegal immigrants are leaving because a soft economy has led to fewer jobs, causing many laborers to seek work elsewhere. Others argue that a tough stance on immigration through law enforcement has spread fear throughout the illegal population. So that's kind of funny and ironic. But if we jump to the Times Online, Mexicans turn to radio implants as kidnaps soar. Rich Mexicans, terrified of soaring kidnapping rates, are having tiny radio transmitters planted under their skin so they can be quickly tracked and rescued. Hundreds of people, including a growing number of middle-class Mexicans, are buying the tiny chip designed by Zega, X-E-G-A, a Mexican security firm. Kidnapping jumped almost 40% between 2004 and 2007 in Mexico, which has surpassed conflict zones like Iraq and Colombia to register the highest kidnapping rates in the world. And finally, from the Austin American Statesman, ICE said that nearly 600 were detained in a Mississippi plant raid. I believe this is even bigger than the Postville raid in Iowa that we covered a couple months ago. ICE updated the tally of people arrested at a large immigration raid in Laurel, Mississippi. The raid at an electric transformer manufacturing facility netted 595 illegal immigrants. Of those, 106 were offered an alternative to detention based on humanitarian reasons. According to various press reports, most of the 106 were parents of small children and were given ankle bracelets and told to appear in court at a later date. So, no jobs, but you got ankle bracelets and RFID chips. Now, if we return to the aforementioned Alex Ansary and his show Outside the Box, not only on Portland Community Media here and also on Google Video every week, he also does a radio show on We the People Radio Network, WTPRN.com, so I always have those latest episodes posted up for you. But his most recent television show, 166, had the third appearance of seer Leon Lagant. So, Alex discusses the next steps the elite are taking to move our global population towards a full-scale planetary war. And then later he welcomes the return of clairvoyant Leon Lagant and his eye-opening predictions about how World War III will be playing out, which includes a Chinese invasion. The discussion of demonic entities working through leaders and people came up as well in episode 166 of Outside the Box with clairvoyant Leon Lagant.
What exactly do you see? Because I'm seeing these guys in joint military drills. We have some pictures of that as well. That took place last year. They got together under the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They have a pact with Iran. And these guys are in possession of EMF technology that can take out our electric grid here in the U.S., communications and other things as well that could affect people in terms of mind weapons and biological weapons. So how do you view the stability of the U.S. and the invasion and all of these things?
Okay, let me try to be really clear and really specific. I can't tell you exactly what Russia's going to do to its neighboring countries. They're all at risk. Now that they have done this, they will do it again, and they will do it again in Asia. I still can't tell you what the final trigger moment that causes them to attack the U.S. I can tell you I'm concerned about the day that they deliver those 10 interceptors, but there's so many reasons and excuses for Russia to attack us. They've set up so many different reasons to attack us on the world stage to be at least make themselves look right somehow, maybe not to Western countries, but maybe Africa, Venezuela, and all the others that are poor. So I don't know exactly what this final trigger is, but when that final trigger happens, it brings a war to our homeland. And in an hour, it falls, so communications will be gone. That's why I say I hope these disasters happen, and someone's listening to this, and when they see these disasters, they'll get their families together before the day they attack. Because the day they attack, we'll just be going about our business, and missiles will start showering into the East Coast. They will hit Washington, D.C., and military targets. We're talking fancy, new, they're no longer new. When I had these visions, these missiles were new and able to navigate. I saw missiles hitting a government building on a city block with civilian buildings not even harmed. That looks really good in the international eyes. But within an hour of that, it's chaos. It's chaos. You've got everyone on the West Coast running, and everyone on the East Coast running, and it's just, there's no law, there's no order. Not at first. Things are just falling apart. And mind you, disasters have already happened, so there's already a lot, and the economy has gotten worse at this point, so there's already incredible amounts of stress in just the average American. So it doesn't take, that's why I say in 1 hour, America's wealth is gone, and what America was is gone. And then it's just people scattering about. So I don't know how long they're going to air attack us, long enough to destabilize us to the point that I'm describing, to the point where people on the East Coast are running into Middle America and people on the West Coast are running into Middle America, and the whole Mississippi River Valley becomes taken over by people that have gone insane, post-traumatic stress disorder, violent, rageful, attacking, hurting, maiming. You don't want to be in a state that touches the Mississippi River, because all the East Coast crime and murderers are going to be moving that direction, and God won't let them get further than that.
Bad news from clairvoyant Leon Lagant there on episode 166 of Alex Ansary's Outside the Box. Finally, on this supersized episode of MediaMonarchy.com, we must remember lost in all the hoopla of the conventions and VP picks and all that, that it's the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. So coming from Brass Check TV, we remember what happened in New Orleans. In the chaos and trauma that accompanied the levee collapses in New Orleans in 2005, a few basic facts were obscured. One, Katrina was not a natural disaster. It was an engineering disaster caused by the federally funded U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Two, far from performing incompetently, remember the incompetence theory, the Bush administration and reactionary forces in local government were extremely effective in attaining their aims, specifically in 7 points. One, the Bush administration did an extremely effective job of withholding vital life and death information that levees had not only topped, they had also catastrophically collapsed. Two, FEMA did an extremely effective job of discouraging qualified relief workers from coming to the area, going so far as to turn many back at gunpoint. They also turned away much-needed supplies like water and fuel and sabotaged local communications lines. Point three, thousands of flood victims were very effectively herded and held in concentration-like conditions within the city for many days after the flooding. Point four, though it claimed to be unable to bring food, water, medicine, or transportation into the flood zone, Homeland Security did an extremely effective job of quickly hiring and deploying highly paid gun thugs to the region who were employed by companies that had made massive contributions to the Bush campaign. Blackwater confiscating guns. The Bush administrations and their friends in the news media did an extremely effective job of painting the victims of the flooding as dangerous and not worthy of being helped. Point six, the Bush administration did an extremely effective job of erasing a carefully researched and thought out evacuation plan developed over many years by LSU and replaced it with nothing. Point seven, post-flood law enforcement did an extremely effective job of illegally seizing firearms from hundreds of law-abiding citizens while allowing criminals to run amok. Incompetence? Poor planning? You gotta be kidding.
Shouldn't the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility? Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming, the cavalry's coming, the cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just three quick examples. We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and says, no one's getting near these lines.
There's no earthly answer that anyone can understand why these people, after 6 days, are still in this filthy, filthy, miserable convention center. Why are they still here?
They were told to go to the convention center. They did. They've been behaving. The attitude there is unbelievable, how organized they are, how supportive they are of each other. They have not started any melees, any riots, nothing. They just want food and support. And what I saw there, I've never seen in this country. And we need to really look at this situation in this convention center. It's getting very, very crazy in there and very dangerous. And somebody needs to come down with a lot of food, a lot of water. There's no hostility there, so they don't need to be bringing any guns or anything like that. They need support. These people are very desperate. I saw two gentlemen die in front of me because of dehydration. I saw a baby near death.
I saw Fox News on Wednesday, and people were here at this building, the convention center, saying, get us out of here. Help us. Help us. And now it's 48 hours after that, and the people are still here. None of them. As far as I know, not a single one has been bussed out of here.
They ain't coming to help. I said it at the beginning. They don't train to help the commoners. So that's just a look back at just a couple of the now forgotten clips of the engineering disaster of 3 years ago known as Hurricane Katrina. So now, finally, we look back at some of the creepy customers coming to Media Monarchy in the past week, of course centering a lot around the black helicopters over Portland for the DoD terror drills. But we had, of course, the headquarters of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command at Fort Knox in Kentucky Googled Marine Corps recruiter arrested. We went over that last week. KQED in San Francisco Googled they rule. NBC Universal in Universal City, California hit me from blacklisted news. Apple Computers out of Colorado Springs, Colorado Googled Joseph Biden Illuminati. SAIC hit me up repeatedly from their D.C. offices and San Diego offices Googling SAIC investigated by FBI, conflict of interest in SAIC. We had visits from the Presidio, Monterey.Army.mil in Monterey, California. Of course, you know, one of the language schools where Lee Harvey Oswald and some of the 9/11 hijackers got language training. We also had the State of Texas General Services Commission. They Googled martial law, Arkansas. We had the Drug Policy Alliance in Ashburn, Virginia, Google Anti-Drug Abuse Act and Biden. The Information Systems of the U.S. House of Representatives were reading about Selection 08, last week's postings about McCain's office evacuations, etc. Our own Oregonian hit up my post, linking to them about black helicopters, urban training. State of Oregon out of Salem hit me up from whatreallyhappened.com. Adobe Systems, Lehman Brothers, all from whatreallyhappened.com. State of Oregon offices hit me from Dig. The United States Postal Service out of New York hit me from whatreallyhappened, as did Merrill Lynch. Hilton Hotel Corporation in Portland, which there's nice photos of those black helicopters buzzing the Hilton Tower, Googled Portland Navy SEALs. We had someone from West Virginia University, WVU, in Morgantown. They hit me up from the unfortunate link from Stormfront, the white supremacist organization that reposted my story about black helicopters over Portland. And finally, the Computer Sciences Corporation out of Falls Church, Virginia, Googled Portland, Oregon, Black Op. And there it is, my friends. August 29th, 2008, episode 89 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster. I appreciate everything out there. The thousands of hits I got from the reposting of this Portland black helicopter black op story. So we'll keep checking it out. I'll keep you notified if you keep me notified, my friends. And we'll keep doing it on MediaMonarchy.com. So, like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get Kim just the same.